This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to episode 4, part B of the Special Relations Podcast, counting down our WWE Top 100 Matches Ever lists. This is a special episode because I am eventually going to be a man of my word. We did promise you that it would be a part B to finish off our lists last time, but we didn't manage to get that to happen, scheduling issues. But you do have a special extra episode of the Special Relations Podcast. We are having a second special after only 4 months, because why not? Joining me at this time, I've got the man who broke the internet with the most unpopular of opinions on a match that was on his list. We will bear that in mind. It's Ben Daniel Radcliffe Locke.
No. Why have I got to be Harry Potter? Why? Oh, because I'm English. Oh, we all sound just like him. I've got glasses.
To be fair, you do play two characters on this show.
I do, actually. That's a very good point. How are we all, anyway? Are we all okay?
I'm all good.
Grand.
Yourself?
Sorry, I was having a drink of beer.
That's all right.
Yeah, absolutely fine.
A drink of beer, or preparing your character for the next introduction. It is the Christopher Eccleston of Place to Be Nation, and not just because he's a Time Lord. It is Rory McNamara.
Oi, oi, Savaloy.
How are you, kind sir?
I'm all right. Did you know that Cena v. Umaga from Rumble 07 really fucking sucks?
according to someone, it does, aye.
Can I just start on that? Sorry, just to cut in straight away.
Absolutely.
Right, that bloke said, "Oh, it's got sealed to the face."
That bloke may be listening right now.
If he is, I've got the right to reply. It's got steel stairs to the face. That makes it a good match. Well, that means that every single Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin match is a great match then, because that they have that same spot in it. Sorry, I'm that is not a good match, sir.
It's in your top 100.
Yeah.
I'm going to anti-defend you here, if that makes any sense. It's in your list. It's not in mine at all. I'm the one who should be taking this flack, but I'm quite glad that I'm not, so carry on.
Yeah, at no point did I say, oh, it sucks. I'm like, it's 70th on my list. It's quite
binary,
good.
Binary opinions in that internet place, Mr. Locke. You should know this by now.
Very true.
I had it higher than 70, so I'm okay.
You're okay. You're fine.
Not in my list at all.
Anyway, yeah, you certainly made a splash, Ben, and that's what more can you ask for?
I do that every day, boys.
And if somebody has got something to say about your article, just meant that they read it and they enjoyed it enough, or didn't enjoy it enough, that they wanted to comment on it. So well done.
Very good point. I like that.
I wrote three things for the World Cup, and I don't even know if anybody ever read them.
I did.
Thanks, Rory. we are back again. We've had two attempts already of doing the top 100. We've only managed to get 16. My maths is rotten here. 60 done. 70 done.
70 done.
So we're up to an epic 6 hours. So what we're going to try and do is finish this in a time that you can listen to this whole podcast, and Roman Reigns against Triple H from WrestleMania 32 will still be on your screen by the time you listen to us here. So,
in fact, we will all just be announcing it as our joint number one as the bell rings. Yeah.
But announce it's the joint number one, only if they say that they'll just take it off the network completely. Just Benoit, just take it off completely. So, shall we begin, gentlemen?
Let's do it.
Okay, doc. So, first of all, Expelliarmus, Mr. Ben Locke, what's your number 30?
So, my number 30 is from, is a really depressing fact for you, boys, from 16 years ago.
Jesus.
From No Way Out 2004, the WWF title match between Brock Lesnar and Eddie Guerrero.
I don't believe that made my list, although I do love the match.
I've got it back at 67.
Oh, so we can talk about it. Yippee,
kick us off then, Ben. Go for it.
Excellent.
I watched this again the other night because I thought, well, I need to do a little bit of research because I'm not really the research guy, but, you know, I like to watch things again. And I was just so impressed with how good a match it still stands up today. It's probably one of the best David versus Goliath matches they've ever done, in my opinion. You know, Brock just brings it, even if he's about a month away from quitting. We didn't know that at the time. But, you know, and Eddie, he's just absolutely amazing. The crowd as well is unbelievable. And it is probably also the apex of Taz and Cole's commentary. I can't believe I'm giving Michael Cole any praise, but there we go.
Here comes the pain court.
to be fair, they are so good in that sort of time period, and that is peak them two as a pairing.
With the reins.
Sorry, forcing
the reins.
Michael Cole isn't a bad. I've said this before. Michael Cole's not a bad. Again, sidetracked already. We've only been doing this for 15 minutes. Michael Cole's a good announcer when he's allowed to announce. And I think you're quite right. It was everything about the match, down to the commentary, the crowd, the guys in the ring, was just excellent.
He doesn't even work here.
I might not be the only one. And I'm not afraid to admit that watching this at the time was very emotional. It's even more emotional now.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can't bring myself to watch it in case I do start having a wee bubble to myself.
I might be wrong, but I'm guessing we've all heard Scott's second part of his list. And he said, like, the top 35 matches, I think, were all 5 stars. This match isn't a 5-star match. It's probably about 4, 4.5 tops. But the crowd heat, if you pardon the pun, just takes it to that point where I've got to put it in my top 30.
Yeah, I had it, but it didn't make my list. So save your hate mail. Or rather, actually, very similar to where Ben had Cena Umaga. So send me your hate mail. Yes, I had it at number 67. Another, if you've listened to parts 1 and 2, or whatever we're calling them these days, you will know that there were a slew of matches that I listed in my head as soon as this project was announced, and this was one of those. I rewatched it specifically for this project to ensure that it was list-worthy, and so it remained. I did think they probably missed the peak before the denouement. I do think half an hour is a tad long for that David Goliath story. Maybe it's one of those where you're not watching it in the moment and you're kind of just tapping your fingers on the keyboard waiting for them to get to the crescendo. When they do, it's still amazing. Obviously, the crowd heat does carry it. And it's a moment that resonated at the time and blah, 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 did even more 21 months later, he says, getting just a tiny, tiny bit teary-eyed as he talks about it. Now, I don't think it's a particularly great match. It's not quite as well structured as it should be, but sometimes you just got to leave all that at the door and just have your hankies ready. So exactly. Safely on my list, 67.
And I also love how the Goldberg interference didn't lead directly to the finish.
Directly, yes.
Eddie had to do something to win the title.
Yes.
It wasn't just a spear and a lucky pin.
I've just made myself a liar. It's actually number 62 on my list, so it has made my.
Okay.
So, but yeah, if it's not a 5-star match, it's not a kick in the arse off it, but it's a 5-star package from start to finish.
Yeah.
No.
I don't begrudge having it very high on the list at all. I really don't.
I not entirely at all.
Understand.
Just need to compose myself again here.
That's a bit of a tearjerker. We missed our own kick there, you know.
We started out the gate with the
chopping onions. Top 10 minutes.
Yes. we've already got old Yeller on it to scan. It's okay, Rob.
Come on, McDougal. Be strong, big man. Let's go.
Moving swiftly on. My number 30 is John Cena versus CM Punk from Monday Night Raw, February 25th, 2013.
We'll not have too long to talk about that.
Yeah, that was in my 90s. So, yeah.
So let's have my number 30. Another one I'm very interested to see where it falls in the final composite list. And that is Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels from, dramatic pause, SummerSlam 95.
That was in my top 50. Just give me a second.
That's coming up very soon on my list.
It wasn't in my top 50. Number 59. It did have a 5 in it.
Okay.
It was in your top 50s.
Top 50s.
Yes.
Nice save. only slightly gritted teeth.
So, Harry, number 29.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McAvoy. For 14 years, I consider this match to be the greatest tag match in the history of wrestling. It is Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle versus Edge and Rey Mysterio from No Mercy 2002.
I was not far behind at number 35 for this one.
And I agree with you that about the greatest tag match in company history, and it's coming up later for me.
Okay.
All right. My 29 is from the 18th of September 2003 edition of SmackDown. It is Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle, the Iron Man match for the WWE title.
Yeah, not on mine, I'm afraid.
Not on mine, so go for it.
So I think this might be one of the best structured Iron Man matches they've had. They fit it through the television. Obviously, you're going to have ad breaks, which you don't have on pay-per-views. You had Brock Lesnar being the absolute shithouse heel. He goes one up, he rattles, or he goes, does he go one up, or does he go two up? And he absolutely rattles Kurt with a steel chair right in the head. Fair play, gives up the fall, but it's psychology, giving up the fall, but you also take your opponent out for a good couple of minutes, and then he rattles off two or three falls, quick succession after that. Building up to the crescendo where I believe the finish is it the finish that Kurt has him in the ankle lock as the time expires?
Yep.
Yes, I thought I'm just making sure I didn't misremember that. So you're building up to that as well, and that was for Angle needed another fall for the draw, and it's not anticlimactic as some of them are where you see them from old school time limit draws where you know that it's going, obviously you know that it's going for the time limit. There is a time limit on this one, but it's not anticlimactic that your guy that you're desperate to score the equaliser doesn't. It's a sporty feel in an Iron Man match that you don't always get from pro wrestling matches.
Yeah, nice try. no, it does. It, like all of the best, any Brock Kurt matches, it does feel like a sporting event. I had the match at 19 a bit earlier in my list. The Iron Man match, I must say, I did not go back and rewatch it for this project. If I had, it might have snuck in. From what I can remember about it, this is my own personal view, I thought an hour was a bit long for them. I think they were helped by the breaks, to be honest with you. I found it a little bit repetitive. I did like the fact that it wasn't quite the dramatic final fall in the final second finish. They worked that and the finish, was it 5-4? 6-5?
6-5, I think it was.
6-5, yeah. And it was the challenger who couldn't quite get the fall back at the end. It was as realistic as you're going to get an Iron Man match finish these days. And a lot of the work was good, but for me, an hour was, as bizarre as it sounds, a little bit beyond them. Still very good, though, as you would expect. Yeah.
I've got 2 points. Rory's kind of mentioned them both, actually. One, it actually works on TV. An hour match actually works with the breaks, because you're not so... Like, if you're not really... it's one of them, isn't it? Because you're not going to be coming to the end of the match till the hour. You can sort of leave it on, and you're not going to be so invested in it. I mean, but you're still going to watch it. This isn't making any sense. I know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're saying, because you know that match is still going to be on in an hour's time.
Or 40 minutes time, you can just leave it. I mean, and the other part as well, I think Rory also alluded to it, two legitimate sports athletes. This felt like a legitimate sports feud. The three main matches that they had all felt the most legitimate wrestling was real for those 30 minutes, or an hour in this case.
Yeah.
I think it was a match too far for them, as my SummerSlam match also made my list. But there you go.
Yeah, SummerSlam match is excellent as well. And one aside, it's interesting to see how long it actually went, because it was obviously a SmackDown, obviously recorded. I wonder if they just wrestled for 45 minutes and then pretended it was an hour when it were on the telly.
That's just an aside.
It's just a little thought of that there. It's not something that keeps you up at night.
It's little things like, you can hide stuff, count out or DQ victories in the breaks, can't you, if you want to? So you make it a legitimate, so people think, I might miss something here, but you haven't quote unquote missed anything, have you? Because the end of the match is still going to be on.
Yeah. I don't know how. Well, I suppose if it's only a count out, you've not really missed anything. But yeah, imagine you went away from the break.
That's what I'm getting at. You're not missing the end of the match, are you? Because you still know there's going to be another half an hour, 40 minutes to go.
That would have been the expert thing for that. Remember when they trialled the app? They trialled the thing where you could watch Raw during the adverts.
With tout.
With off. Aye. We can watch Raw through the
complete adverts. Complete with camera for tout, yeah? five years, etc.
Does it come with the app?
The poor guy making minimum wage. Anyway. Paymasters. Yes. Excellent pick, Callum. I will go back and rewatch that match this weekend. Let's crack on with my number 29, shall we? And we mentioned it. Well, we're going to find out. It's Brett V. Diesel for the third time from Survivor Series 95 now.
Where have I got that? That's coming up.
Yes, not too far away.
Okay. Let's have your 28 then.
28 for me, also Diesel, but against Shawn Michaels from Good Friends, Better Enemies from 1996.
Yep, very close to me. I had that one back at number 32.
Oh, I've ranked that very low. I had that at 70.
I think you should start something.
Okay, I watched again, doing my research, I watched this again the other night. A couple of things. I mentioned it in our chat tonight. There's two amazing spots in this match, neither of which involve a prosthetic leg. And we'll get to that, I'm sure. One, Diesel's jackknife through the table. Absolutely amazing. It's sudden, it's vicious. I hate Shawn no-selling it, though. That part I hate, but the actual bump is fantastic. And two, Diesel's catching Shawn when he's trying to do the super kick and then knocking his head off with that clothesline pops me every time. The match is fantastic. It's not Diesel's best match. That's coming up in a bit. But for 20 minutes, love it. And then the whole bit at the end with Shawn's like in your face celebration just caps it off to a T.
You next, Callum, for unpopular opinion mode.
No,
only in the 70s. Nobody has good matches.
I will happily admit now that this match is that I've ranked this match far too low, because we were talking about it the other night. It's such a good match. It's on the I know I keep talking about the legendary Shawn Michaels from the Vault DVD.
Oh yes.
and the two of them do the commentary on it. But it's the thing about Nash, is, and I think we spoke about it a couple of times, but the amount of matches that he's actually in, is he'll never carry a match. No. He's not that type of guy. But if he's in with the right person, he'll have a great match, but he'll carry his weight. And he did, like, he is excellent at what he's good at. And that's that sounds really, really stupid. But I hope you get where I'm coming from. For that. He knows what he's good at, and he's really good at it.
And the other bit before I forget, when Diesel is staring a death hole through Vince, and the King's there, it's just doing, he's here. sorry, Cal. While it was still in my head, I just love that bit.
you get things like, Nash is throwing a hissy fit at the side, staring. I wonder how serious the staring down Vince was, knowing the circumstances of what was coming in a couple of weeks after that. But like, even to put it into context, if Jack nased him through a table, it was done so little at that time that he didn't even take the monitors off. So he slammed them on the table, and all he was done was covered in cables and TVs after that.
And it wasn't one of these like cutaway tables either. It was a
proper.
Yeah.
He put him through with some mighty force.
It was just, and like I said, it's just the suddenness of it. It wasn't, like you say, there was no prepping. It was just on the outside, right? He's got it. I've got him. I'm going to pick him up. He's gone.
And it was, you're good through this table, whether you like it or not.
Sorry, Rory, so, we're taking up all your time here.
I don't know, 32. it was just a very technical point, isn't it? We like to make those on the show as well. I do like how sharp the power bomb is. It's straight up, straight down.
Yeah.
If there's no preparation for it, you don't see it coming. Actually don't. One second after even motions to pick Sean up, Sean is swallowed up by the monitors. It's an amazing spot. Yeah. I know I'm going to get the old man yells at Cloud thing. Spots these days, all this flippy NXT stuff, blah, 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 setting up spots, It didn't happen here. They had me with this one. And this is proper wrestling, etc. And yes, I got that one in early. I should say, tangent. I am, as we speak, Ben has wanted me to do this. I am watching. What do you people call it? Is it Tay Kick Out Over? Is that what they call it? It took place on Sunday?
No. Play nice.
For those who care, Tegan Nox versus Dakota Kai is about to start. I'm sure they'll be selling stuff. Anyway.
Tegan Nox, selling stuff. Sure, the whole country wheels.
Reason this one is so high on my list. Very important match for HBK. He needed this to show he had a little bit of edge, which harnessed even further in the match we'll talk about a bit later. And all the credit in the world to Vince McMahon for making Diesel, who was out the door the next day, he's had a couple of rather important things to do a few weeks later, look like a complete and total badass. It just sticks in my craw slightly seeing this Diesel. Like, why the hell didn't we get this one for the previous 18 months? We could have had this guy rather than the bloke outside Titan Towers wearing a Santa hat. You know what I mean? Missed opportunities, yeah. A glorious match. Still a little bit ahead of its time for April 96, actually. Still really stands up to this day, and I'm very pleased to have it nice and high in my list. Sean Diesel was my 32. Great stuff. I'm glad we've all got it too.
You're saying that Diesel had a bit of an edge. Do you know who else had a bit of an edge? The Royal Rumble match in 2020. Oh, no.
Is that really the best you can do?
Well, to be fair, it is part B of episode 4, so I can do it all night.
And to be fair, they didn't just have a bit of an edge, they had a total edge.
I had loads of edge.
Yeah.
Ben, don't encourage him. He doesn't really.
Sorry.
Just you wait to the April episode. Just you wait.
British, why do I think you, British, why do I think you're going to be disappointed?
Wins, Scottish when he loses, just remember.
That's fine. He's going to be British all night long. Speaking of Royal Rumbles, my 28 is from the Royal Rumble 2015. It is John Cena versus Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar.
And where did I have that?
Not on my list, I must say. Not on mine.
It yields. It's on mine. Yeah, there we go. Number 63.
You got it, then, gents?
Go for it, Cal.
Alrighty, so this was, for me, this was, like, Rollins was always really good, but this was the time that he probably proved that he could hang in the main event. He was really, really good in this one. It's Triple Threat's goal. It's one of the better ones. That's why it's up there on the list. I always remember this match, watching it intently, because I was convinced that Rollins was going to lose, but then he was going to cash in the Money in the Bank. I was absolutely convinced of it this night. And he didn't, because he got pounded by the two of them. But it was just, there was never any downtime in it, which is understandable because you've got three guys. But it always seemed like there wasn't any periods where one guy was out of the way for too long. It was the first time I'd ever seen, was it the Phoenix Splash? It was the first time I'd ever seen him do that. Yeah. And I think it's
the only time he's ever done it in the WWE. I might be wrong on that.
I was in awe when he did it. I was like, oh, gee, my God. How did he do that and not kill himself? Because I know if I did it. I mean, I can't do a forward roll without hurting myself. and he's whipping this out. It's one of the, it's the 28th best match I've ever seen, clearly. But it's one of the best triple threats, I think, as well.
Yeah, so it's a really good triple threat. And it's probably one of the last appearances of the Brock Lesnar that everybody knows and loves. And before you started pissing a lot of people off, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
You know, before he just relied on Suplex City all the time.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if he'd shut his mouth during that main event. Suplex City was never born. Although it was born before that, because he beat Cena with 16, but that would have died off eventually. But yeah. Was he not slightly more active at this time?
Slightly,
but it was superb.
They all bring it. There's no real downtime in the match, which I know, you know, sometimes in a triple threat you get that, don't you, where even with a triple threat they're still lazy, but in this match all three guys brought it.
Aye. I think Lesnar obviously likes working with guys who he can throw about.
Yeah.
So Cena will let him throw about as much as he can, even though he's a big guy. Rollins he can probably lift and chuck halfway across the arena if he wanted to, and that's why you see him face guys like Balor and he's going to face Ricochet, because he can just throw them about willy nilly. And I think he enjoys working with guys like that. So if he's working with guys that he likes, he'll be more motivated to put on a good match, and it showed here.
Why did she not just kick the trash can? Why did she do a cent on into it? Oh, look, even if I've just got the closed captioning, even Nigel agrees with me. There you go.
So I was wondering what
just
part
kick
of
the
match the that
fucking
happened.
Thing.
I was thinking, when the fuck did they? When did a trash can get brought in this match?
This is all we're getting. It's your fault.
You're the one getting me what? And let's face it, what else would I have 3 hours to build watching this shite? Oh, sorry, everybody.
Oh,
Super Bowl.
Sorry, Tim. I do like NXT. It's just a bit overwrought sometimes. Anyway, yes, yeah, sorry. Very quickly, because it wasn't in my list. A triple threat match. The first big match I watched on the network, as I'm sure it was for all of us. A really good triple threat match, but my animus for triple threat matches means I couldn't rank it. But really, really good stuff. And Rollins winning surprised me too. Shall we move on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He says he hates triple threat matches. So, Edge and Christian versus the Hardy Boys versus the Dudleys. Oh, I really thought about that one. From TLC match from SummerSlam 2000.
That was my number 40.
And my number, it's Ben, so we can talk about it.
Got it.
44.
Okay, there we go, yeah. For those of you who listened to the previous edition, we thought we would have talked about this one, but I have this one in reserve, and it was the WrestleMania one we talked about, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, SummerSlam 2000. Yeah, this is the one for me. I should say, if you haven't heard it, I did rank the WrestleMania match, but a little bit lower, back in the mid-40s, 46 to be precise. But, yeah, I've got this one at 28. I still think pretty much everything I'm watching on my screen right now, this match between Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai, one of the very many that probably wouldn't exist in such a, and I know the NXT fans, if you put the wrong word, NXT fans won't like me for saying it, in a such mainstream position, but NXT is mainstream, if it wasn't for this match. This was a watershed match, in my opinion. There's a real before and after the TLC match. This is where things really kicked up to a whole new level. A level I never thought the WWF were capable of, to be quite honest with you. I don't think the WrestleMania match has aged very well. It didn't make my list. This one still takes my breath away every time I watch it, which is often. A prime example of six guys just letting it all hang out because they had the freedom to do it. This match doesn't feel scripted. It doesn't feel agented. Yet at the same time, it doesn't just feel reckless. It's the way they use the TLC concept at a time where it had never previously existed. It's still to this day, it's quite something. It really is. It's a glorious match. Again, another one where you can perhaps quibble about the winners. But let's face it, you watch this match, you're the winner. Number 28, TLC 1, Edge, Christian, Hardys, Dudleys. I don't think it will ever date after. I like a lot of other matches that came slightly before it, and indeed a great many after it.
Can't really add anything to that.
No.
It has aged gracefully, let's put it that way. That's going to be 20 years old this year, boys. There we go.
Oh,
funny that.
Ben. Come on.
You know, if I'm going to be helping both of you out, then.
I think the only reason that I have the WrestleMania one higher than this one is because I've watched it more. It's been a while since I've seen this one, so I'm going to need to go back because it is excellent.
I think there's more craziness in the second one that in the third or the third one, however you want to phrase it. So that's why I put the 17 match just ahead of it.
It just feels I had number 46, so I'm not burying it or anything. It just feels a tad more, bring out the air quotes, planned for me. But they're both, you know, worthy of anybody's list. They have to be.
Am I right in saying, or am I completely making this up? And it's a different match altogether. Did the Hardys and Edge and Christian not have a ladder match the next night on Raw as well? Or is that some other time?
They had one the next month on Raw.
Was it the next month?
Where?
Did they have one to like kick off when they moved network?
Yeah, it was on that. Yes, it was. It's on the Ladder Match 2 DVD. And that is actually where Edge and Jeff debut the spear while you're holding on to the belt spot. They don't quite get it right there, if there is a way to get it right. They did 6 months later. Yeah. Nice powers of recall there, Mr. McDougall.
Imagine going through what you did the night before and then doing it all. Somebody comes up to you and says, we want to do that again. And you're not telling them where to go. Oh, unbelievable. So even better. Even more praise for the guys doing that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Let's have your 27, Ben, shall we?
20. Oh, God, no. Hey, boys, sorry. I was too busy yapping with you guys then. A 27 is, I probably would say, very controversial to even be this low. It is the ladder match from WrestleMania 10 between Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon.
Oh, higher.
Oh, much higher.
Okay, I thought as much.
27, Callum.
27. So my number 27 is the Intercontinental title ladder match between Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels. From SummerSlam 1995.
Yep, for those of you with long memories, will remember I had that one way, way back at number 30.
And it was number 59 for me, so we can talk.
Big John ladder matches.
You go first, another ladder match.
Again, it's one of these ones. Is it overshadowed by its more famous younger brother or older brother? It will be from 14 months prior. Still an excellent match if you take out Sean Sissy Fit right at the very end. I know he's a perfectionist, but there's a level of professionalism that you need. Not always a word in Shawn Michaels' vocabulary, especially in the mid-1990s. If you read one of the Titan Sinking book or Titan?
Yeah, one of those ones.
And they talk about the constraints that they get put on them by Vince's new cleaner standards and practices, where they didn't want to use the ladder as a weapon, even though they managed to get around that. The constraints that they were under, it was an excellent, excellent match, because they found a way to interact with the ladder that maybe they shouldn't have, or maybe they were told not to. And it is a hell of a lot better than what was meant to be the scheduled Sean versus Sid Intercontinental title match. I think we can all agree that that's not an unpopular opinion to say that's an upgrade and a half.
President Monsoon's first edict. Good lad.
The fans want a ladder match.
See,
he was right in retrospect. Yeah, I had this one very safely in my top 30. A lot of people, and I do think they're right, they say the work is superior in this one to another match we might be talking about a bit later. From a pure work rate perspective, I would agree with that. Michaels is a better worker, and Razor does a whole lot more in the match as well. But it doesn't quite, through no real fault of its own, have the it factor that the WrestleMania 10 on that. But that should, that's not detracting from this one at all. This is a great just throw on for 25 minutes and enjoy match for me. I watch it just regularly for that very reason, with no real airs and graces. Because I think that's what, let's face it, the match itself was only booked like a week before, so there didn't need to be a build to it. You don't need to feel necessarily invested in it. Fire it up on the network, 25 minutes, and you're done. No harm done, ever. I just want to add one thing about the botched finish there. I read about this match before I saw it, because this match took place a year or so before I started watching regularly. And I remember picking up an edition of WWF magazine, in, I want to say probably about 97 or something, where they were doing a history of the Intercontinental title. And they described the finish of this match as two ladders being in the ring and Michaels diving from one ladder onto the other, clasping the belt from midair and then landing on his feet. So when I actually saw the match a couple of months later, I was a little bit disappointed that we had to wait an extra 2 minutes and he just gingerly walked up the steps and sighed a bit on the third attempt. But there you go. Children, animals and ladders. Yeah. SummerSlam 95, I see ladder match. Yeah. It's one of those that will be in these lists in 50 years time, and so
yeah,
should be.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have no problem with it being in the top 30. I'd put it down as low as I did. Purely, I kind of didn't like the fact that it was such a foregone conclusion. You know, like you say, I think the week's build didn't detract from the match, but it did detract from the whole stakes of the match, if that makes sense. Because you know, so you knew Sean wasn't going to lose this match. There was no way that was happening. And part of it was, wasn't it? We're just like Callum alluded to, you know, they're having the match just to have a good match on the show, because this is a show that's going to be headlined by Diesel versus fucking Mabel, and we know it's going to suck, basically. So we need to put something on to hook the fans in. But like Rory says, it's a match you can put on. It's 20-30 minutes. You know, it's quite happy. You've got such high rewatchability. So I've got no problem with it being in the top 30.
Always something new to this match when you rewatch it as well. I think I might have it a tad lower, actually, just thinking about it. Again, another one, very interested to see where that comes in the final list.
Yeah.
Glad people got it again. Where are we now?
Year 27,
I believe, yes.
Yes.
One we have mentioned before, I believe, Cena Punk from Raw, February 2013.
Yes, yeah, I'm again the way lower vote.
Well, you're down in the 90s for this one, is that right?
I was 91, to be precise.
Very recently, Mr. McDougall.
Yep, I was number 30.
Okay, oh, number 30 again. There we go. I'll go first on this one. You're eating crisps in the background there, by the way. I'm just this sort of rustling of paper.
Oh, it's me. I'm eating mini eggs. It's coming up for Easter.
Oh, mini eggs.
Good lad. I'll be grabbing a cream egg very shortly. Anyway.
and for all those who don't know what that is, it's an Easter chocolate, nothing else.
Well, you didn't have to. We'll talk about it. Maybe that's a feature for another day. Anyway, we'll talk about Cena now. Just a glorious free TV match between two people who knew each other inside out, back to front at this point. They could put on a 4-star TV match in their sleep, and I don't think anybody would have begrudged them that. But it's testament to both of these guys that they went out there and gave us something A-grade pay-per-view quality when they really didn't need to. One of those pieces of art where you just need to say one thing that occurs in it and you know what they're talking about. Oh yeah, that's the match where Punk does the pile driver, isn't it? See what I mean? Yeah, so you have 5 seconds after Punk doing the pile driver, capital letters, then you have Cena doing the Hurricanrana, in addition to their own very well honed movesets against each other for number one contendership, where the two of them, I have no doubt at all, they were G-ing each other up in the back to give us a match of this quality.
The one thing I can add to that one is you've hit everything on the head there, Rory. But the best thing in CM Punk's arsenal over the years has always been the chip on his shoulder. And when he's got something to prove, he'll go out and prove it. And he just had a fantastic dance partner to do it with that night, because he wanted to be in the, he thought he should have been in the main event of WrestleMania. He wasn't going to be, so he just wanted to, as for lack of a better term, he wanted to get it right up them, as they say around these parts.
The shop window, if you will.
Yes, he put himself in the shop window.
He wanted to prove a point, didn't he?
Yeah.
He would, despite whatever the Rock and Cena might think, he's the main event.
Any more on this one?
Nope.
Not from me.
I think we'll be talking about them again a bit later.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, we definitely will.
Not spoiler alert. What's your 26 then, Ben?
26 is from the Royal Rumble 2003, Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit.
Wait.
Oh, I had that back at 65.
We'll come later. So your 26 okay. then, my man?
My 26 is from SummerSlam 2013. It's John Cena versus Daniel Bryan.
Coming up very shortly.
All in good time.
Alrighty.
So then, let's see about my 26. Another Iron Man match. This is The Rock versus Triple H from Judgment Day 2000.
Coming up later.
Oh, I had that back at 63.
Rolling our way through to 25 then.
25 is from Canadian Stampede. It is the 10-man tag between the Hart Foundation and Steve Austin, Ken Shamrock, Goldust and the Legion of Doom.
Not yet.
Oh, I had that back at 60. What is it with me having everything in the 60s that you're having in the 20s, man?
Unpopular opinions.
We are rocking through now, boys. The repeats are coming thick.
I'm waiting for the article now.
Why Callum's list is rubbish.
You know what needs to happen, like, when I sound things, we need, like, Callum needs to know cold codes to be like Callum's roaring 60s, like that is going to be a killer match list, like 60 to 70.
I might actually go back through and see what my 60 to 70 is, because it does sound as if it's fantastic.
It does sound really good, to be fair.
So what 2-star slop have you got at 25 then?
Also fantastic is my 25. It is Brock Lesnar versus CM Punk from SummerSlam 2013.
Later.
Not long to wait, but maybe it is. 25. Let's see if we could talk about this one. Randy Orton, Cactus Jack, Backlash 2004.
Was my number 60.
Was my number 43. So okay. Fire away, sir.
I shall kick away. High vote on this one. And a match I very nearly forgot. I had compiled my list by the time. It just flashed into the back of my head that I'd completely forgotten about this match. Fired up the network there and then, and it shot straight into my top 30. What an idiot I was for forgetting it, but it meant I had to watch it and watch it closely, so happy accidents and all that. Just a match that made Orton, for better or worse. I'll leave you to answer that one yourselves, dear listeners. But my goodness me, did he put himself through the ringer on this one or what, eh? You've got Foley rolling back the years, Orton taking everything thrown at him. And I have, again, much like the previous match we talked about Cena, but I have no doubt at all that Orton just said, yep, we'll do whatever you want to do. At the end of the day, this is going to be for my benefit, and if you're going to help me there, Mick, then you want to throw me into those thumbsacks, then go ahead, pal. And that is what happened. Again, a structured hardcore match. It isn't just willy-nilly mindless violence. A lot of people, even a lot of people who support this match, tend to put it in that category, and it isn't. It's created, it's structured, it's built. It also has Eric Bischoff mentioning the word fire marshals during a match, which is the first. And but apart from that, that wasn't enough to dissuade me from putting it at number 25 in my list. And this is going to be another one where the overall rating will be fascinating to see. Guys, your thoughts?
I was even a stage further than you, Rory, because I also had totally forgot about it until you said, oh, I'm going to watch this. When I rewatched it, it got in at number 75 or 74. It rose to 60. Like you say, it was the making of Orton. He'd been doing that pretty boy douche jock character for a while. He needed this match just to put him up to that next level, ready for that world title run that was coming later in the year.
The thing that I gets this match as well is much like his mentor, what would have been 7 years earlier, he's not facing Mick Foley. He's facing Cactus Jack.
Yeah, good. Damn right.
So that just adds another layer to it as well. Mick Foley could beat you to holy hell in a hardcore match, but when Cactus Jack comes out, well, it's like shit's going to go down. Oh my
shit. Just
got... But as you're saying, he... I've completely lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, Mick Foley gave Randy Orton everything to make Randy Orton a star. And the thumbtacks bit, I think, is so iconic that I believe it even made Randy Orton's entrance video.
It did.
And he's taken the move. That's how iconic that spot is. But no, excellent, excellent match.
So, your number 24 then, Ben.
My number 24 from the Survivor Series 1995, Bret Hart versus Diesel, the no-holds-barred match.
Yep, I got that at 29.
Fire away.
Okay, so the reason, I mean, Rory's kind of alluded to it earlier in all the parts that we've done, it's that building of the feud. It's gone from a good match to a very good match, and this is a great match. Bret is the master of storytelling. Both guys using the no-holds-barred steps to their advantage. Bret telling a story with Diesel. He's obviously been told, this guy isn't that good a wrestler. I will make him a good wrestler. I'll show you what I can do with him. Again, and we were talking about a table bump earlier on. That table bump, totally unexpected as well. I think, was that the first table bump they said?
It's the first one I can remember, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And really good, and the whole package again, you know, excellent crowd, really good commentary with Perfect on with Vince and JR, and I just love it because, like I say, it builds on the other two matches.
It does.
And then the bit that just takes it for me over the edge is the whole bit at the end with Diesel with the I'm back, you know, the two jackknives and I'm back. Which leads into that final 6 months where he's not the glad handing, you know, playing with puppies champion. He's back to being Big Daddy Cool, which is what everybody wanted in the first place.
Playing with puppies.
Well, you know what I mean.
Playing with puppies have got him over a few years.
With the Jerry Lawler.
99, it would have got him over.
Exactly. Just on that table bump, so innocuous as well. Brett is walking along the apron.
Yeah.
And Diesel just shakes the ropes. If you watch the crowd, go back and watch that match and look at the crowd specifically, they are aghast at what they've seen with that spot. Now it's just a case of box ticking. Mainstream WWF crowd, and never seen anything remotely like that before. They could, literally, in the most literal sense, they could not believe their eyes. And that is after 20 minutes. It's such a smartly worked match.
Yes. Yeah.
They did so much great work in the two previous matches before, both of which were good enough to make my list a bit lower down. Yeah. But this was real next level stuff. Brett, for it was he, knew exactly what Kevin Nash's true strengths were. And he played them in this match, again, letting Nash look like a bit of a killer. Not as much as he would 5 months later, but a lot within the confines of this match. Brett works heelish, and he perfects the art based on what he did at Royal Rumble 95. He takes that to the next. This is just a next level match for all guys involved. Even Brett, a work rate marble like him, you wouldn't have thought he was capable of doing this sort of thing. The psychology is so tight as well. Tying the ankle around the ring post. And Brett, you know, he's been a bit of a tweener, edging heel for the match. So what he's going to do, right at the very end, he wants to win the fucker. He's going to make Diesel think he's injured from the table bump. They say this stuff ain't Shakespeare. Glorious, glorious match.
It's another great David versus Goliath match. Just Brett just dismantling this guy as soon as he makes a mistake. And he dismantles him both. It's all in his brain, isn't it? Like you say, you know, making him think he's hurt. So that ends the match. But the whole body of work beforehand, you know, basically cutting this guy down in half. They're the same height on the floor, Vince, and all that.
It's brain versus brawn.
That's it. That's it.
Brett,
that's it.
Using brawn.
Yeah.
He brings a little extra.
Yeah.
And I just love little touches like that. Come.
Oh, sorry, gents. I was on mute there for a second.
He's too busy eating his mini egg.
the mini eggs are gone.
Okay. Oh.
Your thoughts on Brett Diesel, Survivor Series 95?
It wasn't on my list, and I've gone back to watch it again recently, and I'm now thinking that it should be. It's one of these ones. Hindsight is 20/20.
Oh, of course.
I found out talking to you guys about a few matches that I should have had on my list. It's fantastic. I would say it's probably the best of the four that they had. I don't think that's going to be an unpopular opinion.
No.
It's coupled as well. It was a great match. With it finished with Diesel audibly shouting "motherfucker"
exactly.
Right at the end. What more could you ask for in New Generation WWF than an MFing drop? So I can't really add anything else to what you guys have said. So all I can really do is move on to my number 24.
Go for it.
Which is from
seamless link there. I like it.
Thank you. So from WrestleMania 21, it is Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle.
Later.
Where is that in my list? Preparation. It must be in there. Yeah, I did. It was the one up from where my page was. It's my number 36. There we go. I knew I'd ranked it. Of course I had. 36. I'll tell you why later on. So my 24.
Yep.
And I think we can talk about now another free TV match. John Cena versus Shawn Michaels. Monday Night Raw from London, April 2007.
Yes, that was my 64.
That was my something. In fact, it wasn't.
Oh, my.
What?
You know, Matt, I must only have been because of the legs. You know what I'm like with long matches.
Yeah, well, yeah. Go back.
We know you don't like legs.
Steady now.
He likes the old short, sharp shock, so to speak.
It's a family show. It's not really.
I'm trying to cut you off.
I was going
to
say, it's far from it, fam.
Before you disprove that. I know. Number 24 I had this one at, and I watched this one live as it was happening. The days I would actually stay up to watch Raw. It seems a very long time ago now. Obviously, on the delays that took place in this fair country of ours.
Did they actually shoot live? Or was it one of those where it was... We still had to stay up.
Just ahead of the game. The match was 36 minutes in total length, if you take out the breaks. Again, it's one of those, was it a full hour? Were the breaks used judiciously to make it an hour's worth of TV time? Who knows? But quite frankly, who cares? A couple of misconceptions about this match. It actually wasn't a WWE title match, despite the nominations list. It was non-title, if you recall. And it also wasn't the time limit draw, so many people have it down as Michael winning very cleanly indeed with the super kick. The journey to get there was another free TV treat. The WrestleMania match was very good, a worthy Mania main event, not enough to make my list. What worked in that one, they added a bit more to in spades. What didn't work, they excised. Lovely story stuff in this one, where they're just fighting over fucking waist locks for the first 5 minutes, and Michaels just manages to escape Cena's two or three attempts, and there's Cena doing the I nearly had you thing. That's right at the start of the match, let alone the other 31 minutes. Now, as you probably guessed, ladies and gents, I do like the little touches. wave hand. It's, another match that probably necessarily need to happen.
Family show, apparently.
Because Cena Orton, Edge Orton, sorry, was scheduled to appear on this show as well, but Orton didn't Orton. And once again, maybe one of the few times, he ended up doing us a favour by making this one fill the entire second hour of Raw. And it's one of those, it's great in its own right, but you bump it up an extra quarter of a star for being on free TV. An hour of Cena Michaels and not having to pay a penny for it? Yep, I'm all in on that one. Number 24.
Like you say, and also the bit I remember is they obviously, they were still plugging the Orton Edge match. It wasn't a case of it starts at the top of the hour.
Yeah,
we've got
exactly.
Something else to come. It's
like they're talking about one of the standby matches they had in 1989 NWA. Great little touch.
Yeah, I loved that. And you know, it was a full on crowd participation as well. The English, I'm not saying this because we're British, you know, the British crowds that they just love the wrestling, don't they? I was in a SmackDown taping where my main event was Luther Reigns versus Eddie, and I still got quite excited for that. And I can't even imagine what I'd have been like if I'd have been at this show.
Don't spoil your list now. No, we want to, you know. Luther's gonna have his mom.
No disrespect to, but at this point, what was the thinking behind them turning up that morning going, John, we know you've not done this before, but how do you fancy going an hour? And to be fair to him, that he pulls it off. It does help that he's got Shawn Michaels to guide him through it as well.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it takes two to tango, as the old saying goes. So he's more than fills his way.
I think Rory has sort of said something earlier on where he said, I think Orton had done, get shock on it, Randy Orton had done something stupid.
No. So
I think that, if I remember rightly, I think that was the whole reason behind it. They were still plugging away with Edge Orton, even though they full well knew.
And they did Edge Orton the next week, the day after Backlash. And that was fucking good as well, actually.
Was it something stupid like Orton couldn't fly out or something? Was it something ridiculous like that?
I want to say he smashed up his hotel room the day of the event. If I'm wrong, then contact us via the channels. We will tell you about
allegedly,
a bit later.
Allegedly.
That's what happened.
Allegedly.
Too much.
Now, was it an immature smashed up his hotel room, or was it like a Juventud Guerrera in Australia smashing up his hotel room because he's off his tits on something?
Yeah, I think we're too kind of amalgamated here when we're talking 2007 Randy Orton.
Quite possibly. So moving swiftly on from the libel that we've just caused.
I can't take the word allegedly, don't worry.
Who's that we've got on our back at the moment? We've got Conrad Thompson, that's Randy Orton. I'm not sure we're choosing our enemies wisely here, everybody.
Randy Orton I'd be scared of. Conrad Thompson, I could take him. Fat fuck.
Anybody, right, okay. To coin a phrase, Ben.
Sorry, Ben. Okay, I'm back.
Ben.
Hello.
Let's keep it moving here.
Okay, where are we up to? 23?
I love you for that. 20.
Thanks.
Fuck off. Disclaimer, I listen actively to Conrad's podcast. They are very good, especially the Arn one. I do like the Arn one. But he as a person annoys the fuck out of me.
Remember, he's just a fan. Just a fan.
I could fuck off with that. I'm just a fan. I listened to his Arn show the other week. He says, it's TV tonight. I'll just need to phone Michael Hayes in the morning. What fan has Michael Hayes' fucking mobile number? I don't.
Dude.
Oh, I know. Rory, you're more well connected in the podcast world. Do you have Michael Hayes' phone number?
One of our staff probably would like to have Michael Hayes' phone number. Not for those reasons, everybody. No, I don't mean like that. I mean, because he liked Michael P.S. Hayes' work, it doesn't mean that he shares any views of Michael Hayes'.
Oh, Jesus.
Rory is our official lawyer.
But after all, he is a free bird. What is his excuse? Or what is your excuse?
There we go. Good.
All right. Before any more rumour and innuendo.
All right, come on.
Yes.
23. Uh-huh. It's one of them new flippy matches, Rory, so you're not going to know anything about it. So it is from NXT TakeOver Philadelphia. It is the NXT title match between Johnny Gargano and Andrade Cien Almas.
It is still to come.
Excellent.
So my number 23, personally, possibly my favourite match ever. But I didn't let my heart rule my head on this one. Number 23 is the unsanctioned match from SummerSlam 2002 between Shawn Michaels and Triple H.
Oh, right. Yes, I had this one back at... Did this just sneak into my top 50? Where's my list? Yeah, 44 for this one.
That was just out of my top 50, so number 53.
Okay. I'll tell you, let's work up this one incrementally then. It's probably the best way to do it for a match like this. Ben, you go first.
So, I like it. I love it. It's 53. You know, I was of the opinion that they didn't need to do as much as they did if they knew that Sean... I actually think at that stage they didn't think Sean was coming back, and that's why they went balls to the wall crazy on it.
I think so.
Yeah, that's a good shout, actually. Yeah, good call.
And the whole thing, I like, you know, the use of blood in it. I have no problem with it. I just think looking at it now, maybe it's 2020 eyes, I just don't connect with it as I did back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not an anti-Shawn Michaels thing at all, but, you know, I think part of it was my Brett fandom of the 90s maybe coming through a bit.
And possibly, I mean,
tribal to the last. Mr.
It is possible.
That might be something. And I'm not fighting anybody who's got that high, by the way, because like I say, it only just didn't make the top 50 for me. But I enjoy it. You know, it's one of the greatest of all time, honestly, in what we thought at that point was going to be his last match, and it wasn't.
Yeah, but, there you go, you've nailed it.
It's my favourite Triple H Shawn Michaels match, let's put it that way.
Yes, and mine by some considerable distance. I've got to say,
I've got to put a positive spin at the end.
A match that made your list that you. I'm not going to do it this time. You've suffered enough. I think I might have ranked this one personally a little bit high.
Okay.
It's one of those I had a really tough time ranking this. Really, really difficult. Was watching this live at 2:30 a.m. on a balmy August night here in Birmingham. I was right at the edge of the seat. And the reason I was is because I legitimately thought we were watching the end of Shawn Michaels before our very eyes. Because let's make no mistake about this. Not only did we think, perhaps understandably, that this was his last match. No, it could have been his last anything. We didn't know how serious his back injury was. So when you have, and this is a very coarse way of putting it, I'm being slightly intentionally facetious here, but in very brash terms, when a match is 20 minutes of Triple H doing backbreakers, in that context, in that context, it adds something to the match. You're like, oh my fucking god, what's he doing to this poor fellow? Bring down back first against his knee over and over again. How can he do that? The guy could snap in two any minute. And you watch this match back again, and you know Michael's had a whole second career out of it. Then you watch it again, and then you see him not selling the back again, and he wins with a rolling prawn hole. This is a match that loses just a little bit every time I see it. Still enough to make my top 50 at final ranking. I think it's going to do very well in the final list, but if I was to do my list again now, I think it would be a bit lower, I'm afraid. Callum, your thoughts?
So when I first watched this, I had only been a fan for about 18 months. I'd only seen or known of Shawn Michaels from PlayStation games. So he was like a mythical sort of creature to me. I remember one of my friends had the WrestleMania 14 video, and he said that this was this guy's last match. He broke his back. He'd never wrestle again after this, and obviously it was 4 years. So then the whole story building up to it, this is his one last match. And you're right in saying nobody knew if this was going to be one and done or he'll land another 8 year career out of it like he did. There was just it's like the wee things. When he did a superplex, but when he did a superplex, because he's got the bad back, he turned and he landed on his shoulder doing it. It was almost like a super jackhammer because he landed on his shoulder and then flopped on top of Triple H because he didn't want to land on his back from the top rope. It's just wee bits of the storytelling like that. There is some points like where the splash through the table might have been a bit egregious at some points, possibly. Other times I watch it, I'm thinking, if this is going to be his one time to batter the guy who put his head through a window, then you probably would do everything you could to keep him down. But I think it's just from it was a passionate, if that's the right word, match between two. And you could tell, obviously, that Triple H was going to give him everything he could because it was his best friend. But you're absolutely right in saying it was all downhill from here in the terms of these two in the ring at the same time. But it was I still absolutely love this match. As I say, I think it might be my favourite match ever to this point anyway.
I get that. It just loses the emotion for me, unlike certain other heart-wrenching matches where it remains with me every time I watch it. This one, because so much is built into the existence of the match, it isn't there on repeated watchings for me.
Mm. Which, to be fair, is why I don't watch it all the time anymore.
No, I get it. I get it.
Like, I don't want, I don't want it to lose its luster. That's because right. I do hold it in such high regard. But
I'm with you to a relative point there, Callum, because my favourite match is in this list, but isn't number one. So I've also heart versus head. Head versus heart, sorry. I've made the right decision.
All right, where are we now? What we got?
You're 23, sir.
My 23 is Lesnar Punk from SummerSlam 2013.
Still to come.
I had that back at 25.
Okay. You're 22 then, Ben.
22 from Mind Games 96. Shawn Michaels versus Mankind.
Nope, not yet.
Coming up shortly.
Cracking.
My 22 is Bret Hart versus Owen Hart from SummerSlam 94 in the cage.
That was in my 40s or 50s. 58.
Not too long to wait for us to discuss that one.
Excellent.
So my 22, is that right? Yep.
Yep.
Okay. For those who care about these things, i.e. me, this is the final match in my list, which I would not necessarily give the full 5 stars to. Everything from number 34 onwards, number 35 onwards, which was the No Mercy tag match, I probably could be minded to give 5 stars to. This is the final one where I could, if I was feeling particularly grouchy, just drop it to 4 3/4. Everything after that, top 21, is a 5. So my final, maybe 5, is Cena Lesnar from Extreme Rules 2012.
Get bloody Meltzer here. And that was 39 for me.
And it wasn't in Callum's list at all, was it?
Fire away, sir. Fire away, sir.
What? Sorry, can we just get back to that? What? I'll accept Rory not having any of this flippy shit in, but that, what?
I just think that there is 100 matches better or more important.
Remember last time I said that I wasn't angry, I was just disappointed.
Ben is just angry.
can I small disclaimer here, and can I just put this one out there? You may revoke my podcast host card here. I have never seen this match all the way through.
Really? Is that serious question? Is that by design? That is not a wind up question.
No, circumstance. I've never seen it. It's always one that I've heard about, but I've just never. Like we were saying earlier on, you go into the network and there's so much to choose for. You choose nothing. It's one of these ones that I probably should go back and watch, but I've never seen it all the way through.
Let myself and Mr. Locke try to convince you.
Please do.
By number 22, Cena Lesnar from Extreme Rules 2012. If you're going to bring Brock Lesnar back after 8 years in the wilderness, when he was Mr. Ultra Unpopular when we last saw him, let's not forget that. What are you going to do? You're going to have him fucking... Near murder. Whatever you stand on Cena, whatever you think about him, whatever you think about, I'm going to be very, very specific. His no selling, which I think is very unfair criticism, made against him too often, in my opinion. But even if you do think that, is there any character better at this point or any point to take an absolute fucking shoeing for 20 minutes from Lesnar in an Extreme Rules setting where that fucking psycho can do whatever the motherfuck he wants to the point? Because, yeah, I know Lesnar's Mr. Unpopular, but it's Brock Lesnar against John Cena. Of course he's going to get cheered. But Lesnar destroys Cena to such an extent that 100% of the crowd, go back and watch it, 100% of the crowd are behind Cena for the final 2 minutes. Yes, of course, 2 minutes later he gets up, hits the FU and wins, but we'll gloss over that, you know, expunging all the goodwill there and then. But much more so than the SummerSlam match, which was too heavy-handed, SummerSlam 2014, and didn't make my list. This is what I want to see from a match between these two. Lesnar doing his level best with all the legitimacy behind him to fucking end Cena, but Johnny Boy being Johnny Boy, him finding a way to sneak out a victory at the end. It's only the slight soddenness of that win that means I could possibly quibble over a 5-star rating, but just watch this and revel in the sickness.
Gloriousness.
By number 22, Cena Lesnar Extreme Rules 2012.
The only problem I have with it is the end and the winner. But I understand why people say, oh, Brock shouldn't have won, but Brock should have just killed him. That's just the end of it. And just going back to a point Rory made, if it was Brock in 2000, like Brock left in 2004, and if he did nothing until he came back, I understand where Rory's coming from with that Mr. Unpopular thing. But you have to remember, he, you know, with the UFC stuff, he not only had his wrestling fans, he brought a new audience in with him. So there was, you know, watch that. If you've ever watched that when he comes back in 2012, you know, grown men were, you know, they could have, I'm not going to hit the family show, Ben, but if grown men could have done something, they would have done something. Let's just go there. They were very excited. Let's put it that way.
I'm not even going to try and work that out.
Well, I was trying to say that they might have just got the cock out, but I wasn't going to be that vulgar.
Goodness me.
Family show.
But the match is glorious. It's just everything. You've got to remember as well, you know, Cena at this point was just getting out of Super Cena mode, but he was still the face of the company. He was still the guy everybody wanted to see get destroyed. I've got my problems with the end of the match. Like I say, that's probably why it isn't 5 stars for me, but it is just I can't describe how brilliant it is. Callum, just get it on over the weekend.
I don't mind Cena winning. It's just a little bit too quick. I don't mind him winning. It's just too fast, but otherwise, sweetness all the way.
That's your homework for the weekend, Callum.
Well, it's actually my homework just now. I've got it. I've actually changed from the all night. I've turned itself off. I was watching Starrcade 1995 for whatever reason. I've now flicked on Extreme Rules 2012. It's now in the pre-match build-up.
I should say, for those who care about these things, I've got Gargano and Balor throwing themselves around him in the name of, I think they call this entertainment. Can I just say it's actually really fun. I just want to say it's a really, it is, because we haven't got many kicked out of moves twice so far, so it's still in the really fucking good range at this point. Oh, look at that. Yeah, that's the one.
The one thing I will say about Brock Cena is that you're absolutely right. If you want to get a guy back on side, you put him against John Cena, because this was at peak Cena hatred, probably. This is when the WrestleMania crowd started giving it all, singing along with John Cena sucks to his theme tune. So bringing Brock back to go up against Cena, probably the biggest babyface move you could do to get him back on side after WrestleMania 20. So there's Edge. He recently came back.
Enjoy it when you get it.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're on the pre-match video just now. Sad John Cena. Edge is berating him for some reason. this was the beginning of the worst year of his life, wasn't it?
Terrible year. Terrible year.
Where he beat Brock Lesnar.
Every show.
Yeah.
My heart bleeds.
Won the Royal Rumble. Fucking terrible year. Anyway.
Ben, 21 while Callum watches that.
21 is John Cena versus Daniel Bryan from SummerSlam 2013.
That will be coming up a little later.
And I had that back at 26.
You're 21.
I am ready. I've got the flame shield up as we speak. And it's only this low because it's slightly before my time. Okay, I'm preparing you here, boys. I'm preparing you here. And I'm ready for the absolute pacing I'm going to take. Right.
I don't even know what it is. I'm the anticipation.
It is an intercontinental title match. Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage from WrestleMania 3.
I think you had that lower than you, Rory.
I did. I've got it at 33.
Yes!
that is still to come. That is still to come.
Excellent. So, right, okay. Paging. Perfect.
Paging Scott Chris Golo. Paging Scott Chris Golo.
Scott's our friend. Scott's our friend.
Scott's our number one fan, and I think he's now no longer a fan.
Yeah, it was fun while it lasted.
It was.
I was there burying Michael's triple H for some time just now. So my 21 am I correct?
You are correct, sir. Yes.
Okay. So this is where the bona fide five star matches begin for me. And it begins with Cactus Jack, Triple H, Royal Rumble 2000.
Coming up.
I had that. Back a bit, I believe. This is definitely on my list. Because I had a... 34, that was. So it was in the last episode.
Top 20 now.
Top 20, here we go.
So in the top 20, I would say all but two matches for me are five-star. And this is one of them. But I don't include it for the star rating, and you'll understand why I'm saying that when I tell you that it is Mankind versus The Undertaker from King of the Ring. I think Callum had it about 70, 75.
Yes, 71. Good memory, sir.
Fucking get my memory. Bloody hell. I'm drinking.
I do not remember that. All right.
Well, no, I'm just impressed with myself. Okay.
So,
Callum, number 20.
My 20. I think we can talk about this now. It is Shawn Michaels versus Mankind from Mind Games, 1996.
That was 22 for me.
Oh, we can't? All right. Well, we'll move on then.
There was a very definite no, we can't there.
I'm glad we can't, because it's a fantastic match that's getting its due. So yes, we'll move on. Number 19.
My number 20, and I'm still on my number 20.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Rory, sorry.
And
the two you did it the last time, it's no matter.
I say Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 25, and I'm sure you both say higher.
Higher
on mine as well.
Ben, press on with number 19.
This is one of our disparity votes, because I remember Rory had his four that he felt he had to put in. So at number 19, it is the Intercontinental title match from SummerSlam 92 between Bret Hart and the British Bulldog.
That was my 48.
I'll be very, very brief on this one, because I kind of talked about this when I was grouping those four matches in the previous part. Just to say, I know it's important. I know, as a fellow Britisher, about this one, I need to see that match again. That's all I want to say on this one for now. You two can talk about it properly.
I don't know how much I'm going to say about it, because obviously I think we've already said about most of these matches, you know, people have spoke about them however many times. It's nothing to do with the Britishness of it. It's from a period of time where, you know, they basically gave Brett the ball, and he didn't just take the ball. He scored about five hat tricks with the ball. You know, everybody goes, oh, but the Bulldogs, you know, winded after a minute. So fucking what? If the other guy can carry him like he does, so what? It's just fantastic. Yes, the crowd is brilliant. Bobby and Vince on commentary are superb. It's one of those matches again. Very high rewatchability for me.
I just can't watch it again. I guess because I've seen it too. It's probably again. It's more my fault than it's the matches. I've just seen it too many times. What have we got, Callum?
Sorry, I'm just distracted. John Cena's bleeding a gusher already. Jesus Christ, we haven't even gone on for too long.
It's a good match, isn't it?
That's all right.
We did tell you.
That's all right. SummerSlam 92. Yeah, there's not much that I can add that hasn't been said already. It might have been Brett's last sort of test before he got it, like to see if he could do the get the big one. And he passed it with flying colours, because as he'll happily tell you, the British Bulldog was fucked. halfway through.
You face the technical guy, you face the legend. Now let's see what you can do with this guy.
Yeah. I mean, I take everything that Bret Hart says with a pinch of salt. Nothing against the guy, but he takes everything so damn seriously. And, whether or not Bulldog was fucked or not, he still had to do what he did. Excellent match.
Quiz question. You said, Ben, that Bret scored the equivalent of 5 hat tricks in this match. Without looking, who did score a hat trick in that very stadium 3 weeks before SummerSlam 92? No picking.
So that would have been the Charity Shield.
I think I know it. I think I knew it before. So I think you took out Mr. Eric Cantona.
Oh, you too. Oh. I tell you what. Yeah, Eric Cantona in Leeds, 4-3 win over Liverpool in the 1992.
Last appearances for Leeds before he went to United.
I was going to say, he must have gone to United not long after that.
He went to United in November. Alex Ferguson called up Howard Wilkinson and he asked if Lee Chapman was available. Howard Wilkinson said to him, no, he isn't, but Eric Cantona was.
There's a sliding door moment, is there not? So, my 19 doesn't have any football references on it. However, it is another ladder match. It is Shelton Benjamin versus Christian versus Lord Voldemort versus Chris Jericho versus Kane versus Edge from WrestleMania 21.
Excellent pick. I had this back at number 37.
I have no money in the banks, so go for it.
Ooh.
I know.
You know what, Ben? That surprises me.
That's an unpopular opinion, I know, but...
Well, after this one, I'll put this on. The reason this one's on, and I don't think I've got any other ones. The reason this is on is because it was as innovative as a ladder match could be in 2005. It was a brand new concept. It is the original and best. Again, as I'm looking at my Iron Brew, original and best. It's been a while since I've watched it. But it did have everything. It had Shelton Benjamin running up the ladder, which you'd never seen before. You had the big man Kane, who was there to be a foil for the smaller guys. You had Edge, who was always on the cusp of the main event and greatness, never quite got there. This was his. It would have been almost the start of the rated R superstar pulling out the win. Benoit, who had never really, I don't remember having much, if any, rematch after losing the title at SummerSlam before. You thought that was him literally climbing the ladder back to the top, only for us to come out of nowhere. Jesus Christ, Brock Lesnar almost just killed himself. not good words when you're talking about Chris Benoit as well. So Benoit climbing back to the top of the ladder, back to get a rematch that he might not have had. I can't remember if he did or not. And he's then out of nowhere, Edge, bang, steel chair, down he goes. Edge, the ultimate opportunist, as he would later become at the genesis of that as well. Yeah, it's just a great match.
It was indeed. I think you pretty much nailed it. Money in the Bank matches for me are much of a muchness these days. This one was an easy pick, as it was the first one. And because it's a particular style of match that these days I'm not all that amenable to, it would need to be a bloody good example of one to get into my list. And the fact that this did and was as high as it was at my number 37, safely inside my top 40, says all you need to about it. And the psychology on the finish, so fucking simple. Benoit's got an injured arm, so Edge is going to stop him climbing by whacking him in the arm with a chair. The psychology is simple as my description of it, everybody. No, that is all you need. I never need to see another Money in the Bank ladder match again as long as I live, because I've always got this one there. I can fire it up at any time. So, Ben, very, very quickly, because we have rabbited on, a couple of sentences. Why? Because it genuinely does surprise me why you didn't have any of those matches in your list.
Just quickly. I find them a much of a, I think, like you say, I find them a much of a muchness.
Yeah.
This one was the one that would have made it. I was going to pick one. Just, I mean, even just for the Shelton spots just alone, but
it's very.
But yeah, much they just all blend into one for me. And but I love the finish, like you say. Just the guy's got a bad arm. I'm going to beat the fuck out of that arm, so he can't get anything.
Gotcha. So my number 19,
Yes, sir.
One we have mentioned earlier today, Bret Hart versus Owen Hart from SummerSlam 94, steel cage match.
I think we can all talk about it now.
We can, and I will start us off. I think if we had done this list anything up to 10 years ago, I reckon this one would have been in many other people's top 100, as it is doing asking around, finding out what people were doing when they were compiling it. A lot of people were telling me that this wasn't in their top 100 at all. I don't think time has been kind to it with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I do understand why. It's a 35-minute cage match without any blood, and it is a little bit on the repetitive side. Putting cards on the table. No argument. It is, I'm going to try and jump out the door, you're going to pull me back. I'm going to try and crawl out the door, you're going to pull me back, etc., etc. That is what it is. But I'm going to go to my grave on this one. That is what this match between Bret and Owen needs to be. Owen's already beaten Bret Hart. We may hear about that a bit later on. He doesn't care about anything. He doesn't care about anything else now, but just getting out of that cage, taking his world title from him. That's what it is. Okay, very simple story, but if you keep that at the back of your mind when watching it, it makes this match seem a whole of a lot better than just seeing two people in pink and black tights jumping towards a blue steel cage for 35 minutes.
It's not
one of those where it's not just what you see, it's what is behind the eyes as well that carries this one. Always going to be a top 20 match for me. It's one of those I would like to actually do a deep dive onto one day when we've got a bit more time. And I've got this one at number 19. Maybe I felt your theoretical tug at my elbow for having this one, what for me is actually a little bit low. But I will always stand by this one in the face of such a screed of incorrectness that people fire at this one. But no, for me, top 20, maybe could have been a bit higher, but Bret Owen, SummerSlam 94.
I'm personally, I'm not a lover of the escape rules, but like you say, it works in this match. Owen, it's not a blood feud. That is what is beautiful about it, because Owen doesn't give a shit anymore. Because, like you say, he's already got the victory over Bret. He wants the thing that Bret covets the most. And if that, all he's going to do is just leave that cage. He hasn't got to beat him to a pulp. All he's got to do is just hit a flash move and leave. It's such a simple, beautiful storyline. And you almost wish they could go back to do storylines like that.
But this is one of these matches that I can, I'll flip flop every time I watch it. Sometimes I watch it and I'll go, it's not as good as everyone says it is. Sometimes I'll watch it and go, yes, it is. You're absolutely right what you said. Owen's beaten Bret before. I think Owen couldn't give a damn if he ever wrestled Bret again.
Yeah.
So that's why the escape rule is fine for, you don't understand, the escape rule's fine for half the match. Owen trying to escape because he wants to win the title and nothing else, doesn't want to wrestle Bret, he just wants the belt. It's perfect.
It's the reverse of the Flair Steamboat feud, isn't it, where Steamboat wins everything until the last match. In this, Owen wins the first match, Bret wins everything else. But Owen's always got the high profile victory. You know, I know we're going to talk about it later on, but they never wrestle at a WrestleMania again. Owen always had that on his brother.
Aye, the one time we wrestled on the big show, I beat.
Yeah,
yeah.
You could beat me on Raw. You could beat me on Action Zone. I beat you there.
Yeah. And did he beat him on Action Zone? Because is that not the one where he? Is that not the Lumberjack where he actually wins the belt and it's dodgy?
No, he gets that Colosseum. First action zone, Brett wins by crotching Owen on the top rope.
Is that a Colosseum home video?
There's a 94 TB finish for you.
And we'd be churlish not to mention the whole bit after the match. Neidhart doing his clothesline on Bulldog, and you know, I've totally forgot what his wife's called. Georgina. Diana. Same bump. What the fuck was that bump she took?
Behind that one.
And it was just, what the fuck? In 94, you're like, what? Even then, you're like, what the fuck? I'm getting to Bruce. It actually needed somebody like a Bruce. They needed a third brother to run interference, because that could have gone on a whole lot longer, that whole them trying to stage up the cage.
Who was the guy with the cracking moustache?
That's Keith.
Get Keith in. I'm always partial to Tom Selleck. Imagine. Get Keith on the case.
Yeah. Keith Hart, conversation killer. Number 18.
18 from the Royal Rumble of 2017, the WWE title match between AJ Styles and John Cena.
That is coming up later.
That's a bit of a shame, because that is my number 18 as well.
Whoa.
It was right there.
It was.
What's your 18 then?
Let's just celebrate the fact we've matched. That's like, you know,
that's a match. Yes, it is. That's good.
Yes.
Spoil sport
match
here.
Game. So we have spoken about this earlier on, before all the football chat. It was, up until very recently, the best tag match in company history. Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle versus Edge and Rey Mysterio from No Mercy 2002.
My number 35, I'll be very brief and quick about this one. I'm not the world's biggest fan of tag team wrestling. I think this is the 35th greatest match of all time. There you go. Simple as that.
I will keep it brief. It was my number 29. It's just brilliant. And four wrestlers, two makeshift teams, and two face and peril segments. They always get big points for me, that does. Just brilliant. Just absolutely brilliant.
For what it is, it's faultless.
Yeah, absolutely.
For what it is.
In a company that doesn't, for lack of a better term, it's not they don't like tag team wrestling. They'd never showcase tag team wrestling.
It's never been the priority, has it?
No. All the tag matches are so formulated that they all blend into one after a while. You can put any two tag teams together, you know what's going to come next. This is nothing like that. It is four guys who are out to steal the show. Again, Paul Heyman chipping their shoulder.
Yeah.
We might have spoken about that in either in the chats or the last time. Yeah. Got a chip on their shoulder. Go out, show Raw that you're the... You're the number one, and these four guys absolutely did it perfectly.
Yeah.
No messing. Number 17, then, Ben. I think it's my 18. Yeah. No, you're 17. Sorry. Go ahead.
We had the same 18, so that's why. So number 17 from Bad Blood 1997, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker, the very first Hell in a Cell.
Yep.
That's to come.
17 for you then, Callum.
My number 17 is possibly low, but when we start talking about the matches coming up, you'll soon see why. It is John Cena versus CM Punk from Money in the Bank 2011.
Wow.
You are possibly right.
I thought I would be, between us three, I would be the low boat on this one, but I'm not. Unsurprised, there's not a whole lot in it, but... That surprises me, but there we go. So we will talk about it later. So my number 17, one I believe I am our high vote on and will probably be the high vote overall, and that is Owen Hart versus the British Bulldog from Monday Night Raw, the final of a European title tournament, as aired in March 1997.
Yeah, 51 for me.
33 for me.
Oh, nice and high, though.
Good fire away, sir.
I will go first. A real throwback match. You are peering through, almost literally given the picture quality, peering through the mist of time on this one. Grainy, can barely see the crowd. The only thing missing was Ed Whalen on commentary. It's and because it felt like a product of decades before 1997, this match has almost become timeless. If you didn't know when this match took place, you wouldn't know when this match took place. That is almost enough for me, even before you get to these two wrestling with the shackles completely off. That's it. It's heel versus heel in the final of a tournament for a what's going to become a vanity belt. It's taking place in Germany. Vince isn't even there. I don't even know if this match was agented. Just Owen Hart and the British Bulldog going deep, deep into the moveset because they have the freedom to do so. And at least one of them, maybe even both of them. No, because Bulldog more than keeps up his end in this one, unlike another match discussed earlier. The both of them have the ability to do so. The first 5 minutes of this one in particular, you'll never see anything like it again. Those kinds of counters, utter anathema for most viewers, before or since. And I mean that in the most positive way that I can possibly muster. Munificent finishing sequence. And I'm intentionally missing out on the 14 minutes in between because that is for you to go back and watch, dear listener. I don't think I'm too high on this match. I loved it from when I first saw it 23 years ago. I love it now. Two of my all-time favourites, showing why they are two of my all-time favourites. And we all need a bit of that in our lives. My number 17, Owen Hart, British Bulldog, Monday Night Raw, March 1997.
I've got nothing to say. That was lovely.
No, that's, you covered everything there, sir.
I mean, the only thing I will say, just from a personal thing, is it was always going to be my number 51 because I love the match, I adore the match, but because of its non-long-term impact and the fact it was, you know, only, I'm doing air quotes, boys, by the way, when I'm saying this, it was only a free TV match, it graded it down for me. But in terms of just a match, like Rory says, you could put this anywhere. You could put this in any territory at any time. And it would still work.
Exactly. So you're 16 then, Ben.
My 16. Oh, I've logged off now. Give me a sec. Okay, here we go. 16. Is so we were talking earlier about how your favourite match of all time. I don't know if this is my favourite match, but it's certainly my favourite ending to a match. And it is from WrestleMania 7, the career match between the Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage.
I had that back in, again, my swinging 60s. I had that at 68.
Seriously, we need to, after the read, we need to know what your 60 to 70 is, because it sounds like the most amazing match list.
It might well, but that is sounding pretty tasty, to be fair. So my number 16 is from a well-regarded event in PTB history. It's CM Punk versus The Undertaker from WrestleMania 29, otherwise known as Tailgate City, bitch.
Yeah, not on my list this match.
Not on my list, no. But I know,
what's
right?
On yours?
But I will say, if there was the greatest like live performance thing, then Living Colour would probably be top three.
Why is it your number? Why is it your number 16 then, Callum?
So I remember this is the closest I'll ever be from. Well, hopefully, this will change the future. But the closest to a live experience I ever got of a WrestleMania was Walkabout in Glasgow for WrestleMania 29.
Were you well oiled?
I was well oiled at this point. Now, bear in mind, this was just your standard 4-hour event. This was second to last, so it would have come on at about quarter to three in the morning. No, aye, quarter to three, half past three in the morning. I was a few deep. I'll just leave it at that. But the atmosphere in that bar, now there was about 1,000, maybe 1,500 people in there, because it's quite big, in this place. The atmosphere for this match, I will never, ever forget. It was there was a buzz around the place. People genuinely thought that Punk was going to win. Everyone counts along with every two count, the final three count. Personal highlight for me, I started a "This is awesome" chant in the middle of the bar.
That's nothing to be proud of.
This was before it was cliched. No, it wasn't. It was 2013. Who am I kidding? But everyone was like, every two count went down, people were buying on tables, and I know I'm still talking about the atmosphere, but that's why it's quite highly regarded for me. It also, fucking cracking match as well. There was at one point that you genuinely thought that CM Punk was going to win because of this. I thought because of the way that he'd been sort of ousted out of the title picture, this would be his, because Undertaker for the last few years had been a bit iffy. This was probably his, you can have this, you can beat the streak to make up for you getting shafted out in the main event. Didn't quite work out like that, but it was the two of them brought out the best in each other. And again, we said it before, Punk's greatest asset is the chip on his shoulder. So he went out there to steal the show, because he thought he should have been in the main event, and him against the Undertaker for him was the proper main event. It was an excellent match.
It is a good match. It is a good match.
Atmosphere is everything, and I wasn't there in Walkabout. I was missing. What is wrong with me? I'm not visiting Walkabout on a Sunday evening. But for me, that match, it's one I specifically went back and watched for this project. It's just a WrestleMania match for me. If you remember, like in the real midst of time when we were doing part one of this top 100, I was talking about Edge Undertaker that made my list from WrestleMania 24. That was one that could have just been a standard back and forth, my stuff, your stuff, shocked face, kick out, final finisher, WrestleMania main event, but it wasn't. This one for me was. The storyline building up to it was sensational. The way they played another Paul Bearer stuff, Punk bathing in ashes, all of that. The match was a WrestleMania. WWE 2013 main event, hit your big move star match.
Yeah.
A good example of it. I'm not trying to bury the thing, but for me, that's all it was. Some might call that an unpopular opinion, but I'm not going to publish it just in case.
I'm getting lots of cheap plugs here.
I was going to say, and to be fair, listen to Scott's one, he did rank it high because he was at MetLife that night.
All counts.
So I think we're slightly different, to be fair, experiences. He was there live. I was in a bar at half past three in the morning, having had more than a few beers. But it does add to it. You're absolutely right. It does. The experience of it adds to it. Again, much like the Shawn Michaels Triple H, I've not been back to watch it a whole lot because I don't want it to dampen it. But that's why it's so high on my list. But I can absolutely understand why you guys, it's not on your guys' list, because, you know, it's not for everyone.
Intangibles are such an important thing. If everybody went into these kind of things just so clinical, you've got to have these. You've got to have intangibles. Like, what does that match mean? Or in this case, WrestleMania, what does that match mean to you? You know, I keep talking. I think I mentioned it in the very first one that we did it when we were doing this. Match quality is probably second or third on my list of importance, and that's. That sounds a bit weird, but it really is. It's the whole package of the match, the angle, how emotionally I'm invested in it. So never apologise for, you know, ranking something purely on the experience you had watching it. That argument never holds water with me.
Let's kick on with my...
That's quite deep there.
It was. It was very, very impassioned. Thank you for that.
Well, you know, it annoys me things like that, because it's just, if you love a match, you love it. You don't need, sometimes you don't need to be like, oh, you know, this is a 4 3/4 match. No. If you like it, you like it.
Sometimes the star ratings from people, from observers of the wrestling industry, as you say, can be quite clinical. Did you enjoy it? Yeah. People would have enjoyed... So, Aaron George, one of his highest matches, but it was high up. I might even be his number one. I can't honestly remember. I did listen to the podcast, I promise. He had one of his best matches was WrestleMania 3. Clinically, yeah. It's like looking at it from a purely clinical star rating point of view, it's rubbish. But it's not one of the, it's not, it certainly is one of the 100 greatest matches, you would argue. We've all got it in there.
Yeah.
So, 16, yes, for yourself, Rory.
John Cena, Daniel Bryan, SummerSlam 2013.
21 for me.
I've had that before. I think that was late 20s for me.
Okie dokie, let's talk about this one then. On the brilliant SummerSlam 2013 pay-per-view, always a pleasure to fire this one up. What a great wrestling match this is. It's what, again, I was talking when I mentioned the Cena Punk match from Raw earlier. That's the one where Punk did the pile driver. For me, this is the one where Daniel Bryan did a superplex and then levered his body all the way up on the second rope straight into the yes chant. And there's 25 minutes of impeccable, faultless wrestling from two A-plus in-ring workers. Yes, I said two. And yes, I called Daniel Bryan an A-plus worker. You'd already worked out. What a magnificent match this is. We won't talk about the final 5 minutes of the pay-per-view because, you know, ego is running wild and all of that. What a wonderful match. We're getting to the stage now where I could attempt to wax lyrical. Who gives a fuck what Barbara Cartland thinks about this match? Just watch it. Yeah.
The thing that I always like, the thing that's most impressive about the match is it's so good that John Cena's got an assist the size of a tennis ball coming out of his elbow.
I was going to say that elbow.
But is it safe to say that John Cena, after talking about him a lot in our three lists, John Cena is a jack of all trades, master of most?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say.
No question about it.
I would say. If, again, a football reference, if he was a footballer, he'd probably be James Milner.
I think we can booster him up a bit more than that.
No, James Milner, right? If you want somebody to play striker, you put James Milner on. England played him at left back a lot of times. see if you get your goalkeeper sent off, who are you going to put in? James Milner, of course, yeah. He could do it all.
Steve Nicol. Steve Nicol.
Now that is something that he works for ESPN. That's actually a reference that our friends across the pond might get.
He
managed New England for a while. I know that.
Any more on this, Shed?
No, I don't think you can. I certainly can't add anything to it.
No. I prefer the other SummerSlam match, but this one is superb. And 21, yeah, I'm happy with that.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our previous podcasts over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlaceNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using www.placetobination.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And be sure to join us at our forum at Bigelow34.proboards.com for all sorts of wrestling, sports, and pop culture discussion each and every day, where you can make your voice heard. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceTobination.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PlaceTobination, welcome back to part two of part two of part three, possibly, of our GWWE list reveal. We will definitely get it finished now. We're down to our last 15. And before we start, we've got a small announcement on that to say that we're just going to... Rough. Never mind. Start again, can't fucking hell. Sorry, guys.
We've got to have one, haven't we? Every time.
I knew where I was going, and then I didn't know where I was going.
you're just trying to bump up the blueprint. You're just trying to, you know, bump it up. And it's working.
The 20 minutes we spoke about Mike Bassett, that should have pumped it up. Right, here we go.
When you're ready.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to part two of part two of possibly what is part three of the UK's favourite 100 greatest WWE matches. We are now down to the top 15. We will get them finished this time, we promise you. This is a guarantee from across the water. But before we do that, we'll just let you know what else is happening on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. In episode 2 of PTB NXT, Jake, Jenny and Tim check out the next 3 episodes of NXT TV from January 2014. Jeff Lynn's wrestling returns with 0 wrestling talk for an hour and then some Ultimate Challenge analysis. A bit like this podcast sometimes. In the latest Extreme 3-Way Dance, JT, Jenny and D'Amato recap the much-anticipated November to Remember 1994. Body Press Your Luck number 4 features Scott Criscolo and Rob Kilner facing defending champion Ryan Everett. On Wrestling Warzone number 36, JT and Chad break down an exciting week of Raw and Nitro from 2/1996. Or 19th of February 1996 in proper money. On Talking WCW number 12, Jenny, Tim and Greg focus on Diamond Dallas Page with a look at three distinct matches. Also be sure to check out the PTBN Pop feed, littered with great content and tremendous shows. That includes the hard-travelling fanboys who celebrated their 200th episode this month, leading to a well-earned sabbatical. Congrats to Nick and Greg on a tremendous accomplishment, and be sure to check out the Momentous Show. Additionally, on the feed are shows that include Clint Butler on Podcast Hour Spectacular, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theatre, DC4U, The Great Debate, Marvel Age, The Brother Sister Rewatch Podcast, and so much more. Subscribe today. And while you're in the subscribing mood, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well, as it's the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, Telling Stories, and Journey Through Infinity. And more. We've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project to determine the greatest WCW match ever. You'll have all year to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found on facebook.com/GWCW matches. Or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. Boys, I'm just going to put this out there. See this time next year. Do you want to just do our top 10s?
Yes.
For anyone interested in joining our 2020 wrestling pay-per-view pick and pull, reach out to us on social media. It isn't too late to buy in and compete for the prize. Be sure not to forget to check out PlaceTobeNation.com each and every day. We have new voices and fresh takes bringing you articles on topics in the world of wrestling, sports and pop culture, including Trends, SmackDown on Fox Report, This Week in WWE by John Crowe, Polly's Perspective and the internet-breaking Ben's Unpopular Opinion. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's weekly walk around the web. And if you're doing online shopping over at Amazon.com, please be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side of the Place to Be Nation homepage, or use placetobenation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps out PTBN with no cost to you. So, gentlemen, that is the final countdown. Oh, we are so in sync. We are so in sync, Ben. call us Justin and one of the other guys in sync because we are in sync.
Like, literally nobody knows who.
Joey Fatone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's an Impractical Jokers all the time.
I got nothing.
more than we got.
I was about to say, that was one more than we managed, so.
So, boys, before we start, thoughts on the next 15? Are we going to put some polish on, or are we just going to let the matches speak for themselves? Because we really can't add anything. We just let them breathe as they are. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we need to do the Scott Criscolo here. Introduce them, and then let the good people take up for 20, 25, 30 minutes for each match, because the matches themselves explain themselves better than we ever could. Even a wordsmith like I.
That is true. You are our resident poet, so
orator.
Don't I know it?
If that's a thing. Is that the word?
I have literally only one match where I want to talk about it. So the other 14 on my list we can just let breathe.
Yeah, I think I've only got one that might need some explaining.
Yeah. Maybe two, actually, think about it. But the other 13 can breathe quite happily.
You're talking about you or me there? anyway. So number 15, to commence the top 15. Ben, on you go.
Number 15, I have three NXT matches left on my list. This is the first of them. And it is Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano, the unsanctioned match from TakeOver New Orleans.
I have a higher.
That's what I do want to let breathe. If only their matches breathe, eh?
Oh, right, here we go. Tim Peoples already eyeing you up for some hate mail. So
I thought you were going to finish that with just Tim Capel's eyeing you up. That was going to be a whole other thing.
I can only wish. So my number 15, Kurt Angle versus Rey Mysterio from SummerSlam 2002.
Not in mine.
15, I had that one back in the high 50s. Number 59 for me.
So definitely, if you're looking at Owen versus Brett as the best pay-per-view opener of all time, this isn't a kick in the ass of it, as I like to say. It's when Ray came in, he was one of these guys that Kurt Angle probably wasn't the high on your list of dream matches, but Kurt Angle got him a good match with NMD, and he certainly did this time. I think it's an it's a hidden gem. If it's possible to have a hidden gem on SummerSlam 2002, because it is such a great show, and it set the table perfectly for it. It was just a great match all round.
Yeah, it's a magnificent opener. I'm very glad somebody had it so high in their list. I wager, Mr. McDougal, you will probably be the high vote on this one. I had it back in the number 59 is a very respectable position. It's 10 minutes. It's a great debut for Ray, even in a losing effort. And Angle shows his versatility. He works this match as a cruiserweight. Oh, is there anything that man cannot do? Yeah. A great, just 10 glorious minutes on what is always be one of my favourite pay-per-views of all time.
I think it's just one of the most perfect introductions to a character / wrestler they've done. I know he had the match with Chavo to his official debut, but in terms of like big match debut, you don't get much better.
And again, he lost. No. Put that out there. Not all about going over.
No, it's the sting rule. You don't have to win.
I think Ray did okay out of it.
It's not the winning, it's the taking part that counts.
Allegedly.
Show me a good list. Right then, my number 15. My number 15 is Kurt Angle again, this time versus Chris Benoit from the 2003 Royal Rumble.
And that was my number 26.
That was my 65 from my seemingly swinging 60s.
You are going to be revealing your 61 to 70, aren't you?
That is coming. I will do 61 to 70. Let me do it at the to later top five, please.
Go for it, Rory.
Lots of great Angle Benoit matches that could have made my list. You remember the half an hour submission Iron Man match was very close. The WrestleMania 17 one wasn't far away. This was the only one that got in there, but it did so at a very high position because it is the WWE title on the line in a pure wrestling match. They weren't held back. They didn't have to drop in any elements of sports entertainment during it. And they had the not inconsiderable task of trying to rescue a pay-per-view from the very doldrums after the other world title match that had come just before it. And no mean feat, but anybody could be trusted to do so. It was these two. And here I am in February 2020. I'm not sure I want to be the guy saying the phrase and Chris Benoit deserved the standing ovation he got. But there we are.
I think you can say it.
I
watched it again. I watched it again a couple of nights ago and I thought, like I said, I've got it at 26 and I thought, I've got this too low. That's how good it was on rewatch.
Mine's clearly too low, but then probably half of my 60s is probably too low.
Still to come.
Yes. You're talking about two championship matches. The first one lasted 18-14. The second one lasted 19-49. One felt like a sprint. One felt like it lasted an eternity. And they're only about a minute and a half of a difference.
One had German suplexes. Just because that's the only move that one guy could do. The other had suplexes with a point.
Yeah, that was good.
That's the distinction.
From the ridiculous to the sublime, if you will.
There you go.
Let's have your 14.
14 from WrestleMania 21. Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels.
I had this one back at 36.
I had that one at 24.
Go first, Ben.
Okay, so absolutely brilliant match. The only two knocks that you could have on it is the Angle Slam on the ring post, where Shawn's back clearly is about 5 inches off it, and the fact that Shawn's in the ankle lock for probably a minute or two too long. Those are literally the only two weaknesses I can have on this match. Just two great wrestlers. You know, what did we call that last episode? It's not rocket science. Two great wrestlers going out, just having a great wrestling match.
Yeah, I have this one back at 36, which is right on the cusp of my possible 5-star matches. In fact, in an unguarded moment, I probably would only quite give it 4 3/4. The 2 points you mentioned there, Ben, both perfectly valid. And I do find the mat wrestling sequence at the start a tad perfunctory when you compare it to, say, the previous match I've talked about here, where it felt as natural as rain. Michaels in particular, again, it's nitpicking. You have to in a list like this, though.
Yeah.
He just seems to be struggling to keep up with Angle just a tiny bit too much. And I think Michaels is the second greatest of all time. So there you go. But everything else we got, again, it was a huge match between, once more, two wrestlers, because that's what the Angle was about, pun intended.
Yep.
Who is the best wrestler? And it felt big enough to be WrestleMania size as well. So safely on my list, no doubt about it, but at 36.
And it was at the time when the brand split was still a distinct brand split. And this was a dream match. These two guys had never come close to each other until the Royal Rumble that year, which kicked everything off. So it was still peak dream match territory. And it shows you just how bloody good Kurt Angle was if Shawn Michaels can't keep up with him. So it was just, yeah, excellent. And they did have great matches after this as well. They had a very good Iron Man match, I think we spoke about in the
yeah, that was briefly. On Raw, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Vengeance one made my list lower down.
And going back to what Rory says, when you get to this stage of the list, you're going to be nitpicking. It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Nature of the beast. No,
you've got,
yep.
Absolutely.
So my number 14 from another WrestleMania involving Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 26 versus The Undertaker, career versus streak.
Yeah, I did not list this one.
I have got that. Where have I put it? It's in, mate. It's in. It's about 70 odd, I'm playing in.
Yes, 75.
So this one is lower than another one for me because it's got sort of rematch syndrome, as I've been calling it through the whole thing. It's always difficult to follow a legendary first match as legendary as the first one is. Looking back on it in with 2019 eyes, as it would have been making the last 2020 eyes now, obviously, it is a bit kick out heavy, finisher heavy. But at the time, if you're looking through it at 2010 eyes, brand new. It's not, you've not been, it's not become a trope of forcing people to if you can't get a cheer from people, do a kick out of two from your finisher. That's the cheapest of cheap pops now.
It's not become the cliche, has it?
It's not become the cliche at this point. You've got two of the best ever. You've got two bona fide legends, first ballot Hall of Famers, as they call them. Absolutely no doubt. Obviously, Shawn's in. Undertaker will be. It's just a case of when, not if. Not as high as the first one because, again, it would be difficult to follow that one up, but they made a damn good effort doing it.
And as well, I mean, my memory might be failing me, but this was the first time that I can recall where they put a non-title match as the main event, apart from the Bam Bam LT match.
And WrestleMania 1 would have been the other one.
Whereas now it's sort of become standard, hasn't it? If the biggest match is if it's non-title or title, it will go on last. Whereas this was sort of the first of that.
But even if you look at the matches that's in that list with of matches that have headlined but haven't had the belt. So you've got LT Bam Bam, which is a big match at the time. You've got the first one, and you've got Rock Cena.
Yeah.
So it's in.
That's the company it's in.
Excellent company, yeah.
And I think I mentioned it in the last episode. I'm all about the slap. You know, Rory says, you know, the match with, but this is the match with the slap. That's how I remember it.
The match with the slap.
I remember it from the jumping tombstone.
The last defiant slap into the jumping tombstone.
The build for this match was considerably better than the WrestleMania 25 match. That was the best thing. I swear, for the first 15 minutes of this match, very little happens. And the thing everybody remembers is the 8 to 10 minute finisher fest and the slap and the jumping tombstone. All felt too contrived for my liking. I'm trying to force a WrestleMania main event when these two didn't need that to happen, but I'm just a cynical old buck. I think the final composite list will prove everybody else is right, and I am me. So my number 14, speaking of, well, yes. at least this one is on my list, but I'm prepared to be the ultimate low vote for Cena Punk from Money in the Bank 2011.
Coming up.
Number 17 for me.
Oh, a bit lower, so okay.
You're not the ultimate low.
Part one seems a very long time ago.
he's done the editing, ladies and gentlemen. So.
It feels like we've been doing this for days.
It's almost as if, you know, like something major could have happened over the weekend that we can't really talk about yet.
Number 13, Benjamin.
I'm going to go into a fury. No. Number 13. So
subtle.
Did you like that? I don't do puns very often, but that was quite good.
That was a knockout joke there.
Oh, don't go too wild, yeah.
Come on.
Okay, so sorry, Rory. From Judgment Day 2000, it's the Iron Man match between The Rock and Triple H.
Ooh, where is that one, mate?
26 for me.
16. 63 for me.
Okay, so I'll be quite quick about this. So as a rule, and I think we discussed it in part one, I don't like Iron Man matches. They bore me. 60 minutes. You know you're going to be waiting to the end of the match. Something's going to happen in that last minute. We all know it, so let's just get there. But this one, I don't know what it was about it. I think it was just, again, just about things that become cliche later on. You know, giving up a DQ so you can get the pin so you can still be one or two falls ahead. This is that great 2000 run of Triple H's where, you know, pretty much until SummerSlam, everything turned to gold. Absolutely love this. And I can forgive Shawn's tighty whities and the Undertaker fucking up the finish. All good.
Go on, Callum.
It's a tremendous match. Praise also to the commentary, the Jerry Lawler's commentary on it. He cuts all the childish shite, and then he actually puts through the psychology of having a long match because he knows what it's like. He knows what it's like to fight for major titles. It's excellent stuff.
Better than anybody expected it to be, I think.
Yeah.
Especially after a match of theirs we will talk about very, very shortly. I thought that would have been the apex, but they very nearly matched it here. Just one very quick thing I do want to mention. The portion between The Rock going 1-0 up with the Rock Bottom and Triple H equalising with the Pedigree to make it 1-1 about 15 minutes later. Probably the best pure in-ring that certainly The Rock and maybe even Triple H himself ever attained. Watch those 15 minutes in particular, but really just watch the whole thing. Yeah. Still brilliant.
Just going back to what Callum said, one of King and JR's best commentaries,
yeah, right.
Pairing, and I would say as an individual, probably King's finest, literally his finest hour.
Hey,
yes,
there you go.
I am on fire tonight. What is up?
And it's been a while since I've watched it, but they didn't really rely too much on shenanigans.
No.
They wrestled each other for an hour, which was
not until them last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
If you remember, Triple H even sent Vince and Shane and Steph to the back. So he was like, yeah, we're just going one-on-one here.
Watertight psychology.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. So, Iron Man, quickly before I do mine, Iron Man ideas. What they should do one time is have a guy do like a total Brazil-Germany, like 7-0 and then a consolation pin for the other guy at the end.
I've always said that. I'd love to see an Iron Man have no dramatic finish, 6-2 or, I don't know, 7-1 indeed, or just a boring 0-0. No, we don't do that one.
No, not again.
Or if we do get in the rumoured SummerSlam at Wembley, have it, because it's at the home of football, have two 30-minute ones or two 45-minute ones with a half-time. Have another match come in for half-time entertainment.
Oh.
That might not work as well, to be fair. given the reaction it got in here. Moving swiftly on.
There was some very big fart in the lift connotations there.
Blows whistle.
Or you could do it if you remember watching the old FWA with the referee, you literally had a red and yellow card.
You are
there's a deep cut there, FWA. Way back in the day. Anyway, moving swiftly on. My number 13, Johnny Gargano versus Andrade Almas from NXT TakeOver Philadelphia.
And that was my number 23.
Even I quite like this one. It's not on my list. Oh, come on. Take it to ridiculous lengths, but yeah, it's...
He knows what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. He knows what we're talking about.
This got me.
It shows you how good this match was. Rory's watched it.
Rory is A, aware of it, and B, quite likes it.
I'm not surprised he quite likes it. I think it might be Andrade's coming out party as champion.
Definitely,
I didn't think. I was quite shocked when he beat Drew for the belt at War Games. Was it War Games? It would have been War Games before this.
Yes.
Not only because he has done it Haggis. He did it over Scotland's greatest export after Tennent's and Iron Brew and Haggis and square sausages. He's up there. He's probably fifth. And Trainspotting and the Proclaimers. He's definitely in the top 10. I thought it was a sort of fluke win, even though it wasn't a fluke win. But he had an absolute. This was outstanding. And the bit with the knees up against the ring post. Oh, God, that is just disgusting. Great match all round. And he was fit enough to go into the Rumble the night after. So the night that Candice LeRae made her main roster debut before her man. So there you go, get that up, you Johnny.
And the match that made Candice quite bearable for those 5 minutes or so that she was there.
What's everyone's hate with Candice LeRae? I don't mind her.
I just think it's I like her. It's just she's very bland. If that if you look at NXT, so you've got Rhea, you've got Bianca, you've got Io. She's just a happy blonde chick. That's just her whole gimmick. There's no hotness there.
Oh, Johnny Gargano certainly thinks so.
Johnny would argue that he quite, and he's making the money. And
you've got only got eyes for EO anyway, so it's fine.
EO. Sorry.
You're quite like Dakota Kai now as well, aren't you?
Dakota's always been there.
Anyway, right, so if you get any comments before we lose Ben.
He's gone quiet.
We'll move on then. Rory,
my number 13.
You're unlucky one.
My number 13, right, some proper wrestling at last. It's Rock Triple H again. This time it is their Backlash 2000 extravaganza.
Number, it's in the 30s for me.
37. Nowhere.
Oh my goodness me.
What?
Let's very briefly try and re-educate you.
I prefer the Iron Man match.
That's fair enough. That's understandable. Like very much in my list. Backlash 2000, the second best example of the WWF lighting the firecracker, hiding behind the bush, and then just watching the explosions. Number 13 seems very high for that sort of match, but nobody does that like the Fed.
What would happen if a Hollywood studio did a wrestling match? This would be the result.
And one of them might actually make it to Hollywood eventually.
And one of them might.
I think Triple H will do quite well. The chaperone was quite good. I've never watched it. I've got no intention of watching it. It's just an absolute... No.
Only the good stuff in this last hour. No talk. We might do our favourite WWE films one day, assuming such things exist.
Fighting with My Family. That's very good.
I need to watch that.
That is very good. It's on Netflix now. It's really good.
It is very good.
It's actually got the good lady keeping up with wrestling. She's absolutely raging at Sonya Deville right now for what she may or may not have done to Otis. And I am fully on board with that. The power belly deserves better. So
it's my number 12.
You're number 12.
Number 12 from No Way Out 2001, Steve Austin versus Triple H in the Three Stages of Hell.
In the 40s for me, 45.
Callum. This one has somehow, somewhere, fallen off of my list.
Not on your list.
It is unlisted.
This is what we in Britain call a schoolboy, ladies and gentlemen,
yes.
From my friend Mr. McDougall.
Your boy here has been compiled on his list, and it was on it. Just a disclaimer here before the power that be, that is the podfather himself, Scott, kicks us off for my transgression. I love this match. It was the first show I've ever watched. It was one of the best match. Again, great match and a great show. which we said a few times through these. I assumed when I was looking through this that it was on my list, and that what I should have done was do a more thorough sweep. Somehow managed to fall off my list when things like Wendy Richter against whoever the fuck I put as my number 100 gets on, and this doesn't. I am angry at myself. There is no excuse. So please, let's just move on. Ben, you're number 12.
As Mr. McDougal said, the best match on one of the greatest shows. The hate is palpable between these two. The stipulation before, when they were not allowed to touch each other until they weren't allowed to touch each other once the contract had been signed, is one of my favourite angles they've ever done on Raw. Great match. The hate just builds and builds and builds, and that is what I love about it.
Yeah, everything feels like it means something in this match. It's split into the three. It's always the three stages of hell don't drag because they're so perfectly timed, be 12 to 30 minutes each. I love the seeming arbitrary nature of the finish. I mean, no real winners, no real losers. If there was ever a real taking part that counts match, it was this one. Look what happened to Austin. The next one. The reason for it only got it down in the 40s is no real fault of its own. The Triple H epic fatigue, which this match doesn't really suffer from because the pacing is so good, but almost guilt by association, but safely in my list. Anyway, safely in my list.
Yes, and mine too.
Callum, let's have a match from you.
My number 12 is Steve Austin versus Triple H, Three Stages of Hell from the way of 2001. It is a match which, again, I wanted on my list, much like the one we just spoke about. This one did actually stay on there, didn't fall off. It's AJ Styles versus John Cena from the Royal Rumble 2017.
My number 18.
Was my number 18.
Real.
So we all love it.
Yeah. And we've actually put it in the list to show that we all love it. So, this one, again, much like Shawn Michaels against The Undertaker, it's got rematch syndrome for me. I may or may not have spoilers. I've got the first one slightly higher. When you think of when AJ was the man in TNA and Cena was the man in WWE, never really one of these ones you thought, oh, that's a dream match. I would love to see that. Then they have matches, and these two guys are physically incapable of having a bad match. They've got some form of chemistry that is just you never saw coming. And they've just, every match that they have is just excellent. You've also got the added thing, it's in a stadium, it's in front of 40,000-50,000 people in the Alamo Dome. It's for the WWE title, which you never thought AJ would hold for an hour, let alone the 4 or 5 months he had it originally. So it's got all the wee added elements. It is an excellent match. I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. Can't add anything to that. Superb.
It's their best one.
Yeah.
I love the fact it builds off their previous matches. I love that Cena only wins this one by activating his version of the super special, either rolling AA. Oh, it's just utterly magnificent. And this one, I know I'm one for kickouts. They earned the kickouts in this match because they knew each other so well. And everything else about this glorious, glorious match, which is easily the pick of their ones for me, but others might disagree. But it's one of those matches I just don't understand that people say they dislike it. And just pathological hatred of Cena.
We watched it in the legendary walkabout. And I remember it wasn't quite a standing ovation they got, but they definitely got Cena after they won, definitely got a seated ovation. For the people who were still, and then everyone went to the bar, yeah, because you've got the Royal Rumble by the numbers after that. But no, it was, yeah, excellent.
Orton winning the fucking thing again. Only good thoughts, guys. Here, I think only good thoughts for this show. Orton winning the 2017
positive.
Rumble
positive.
Is not one.
Positivity.
Oh,
we are the new day. Come on.
Let me keep the positivity going.
No, the best thing for the Royal Rumble wasn't Orton winning. It was Roman Reigns coming out at number 30.
Oh, that reaction.
Excellent.
Precious bunch of idiots actually posting their reaction. Booing, for fuck's sake. Fucking wrestling, you morons.
Two boos in the front of me.
Yeah. Your basement's not that low down. Your mum can still hear you.
Oh, dear. Put the clothes away, McNamara.
Number 12. Be happy, Rory. Come on, be happy. Austin Angle, SummerSlam 01. That makes and keeps me happy.
Excellent. Excellent. Let me find where I had it.
35, I had it.
Oh, so did that.
Oh, that's
nice. It's all very nice.
There we go.
Okay, another one I don't need to talk about. Just Austin turns back the clock in this one almost. He wrestles it like he's in there with Ricky Steamboat and it's 1994. And he manages to maintain and harness perhaps better than he ever did in the WWE in this run, his heel edge. Angle is the perfect, really perfect babyface. Does not get enough credit for how good he was in this stretch. The non-finish works yet again. The work together is chef's kiss stuff. Again, using the multiple finishers, like Angle falling out of the ring on the first stunner and just having enough about him to kick out of the other one. Ah, love this one. Very unlucky not to make the top 10. That's how jam-packed we are at this point. But my number 12, and I'll love this one. Until and maybe even beyond my dying day.
It's another match where a DQ works if it makes perfect sense, and it does here.
Hi, and it was a heel using logic for you to, and you hate him for it, because absolutely there should have been Steve Austin should have got disqualified. He kept taking out referees, but yeah, just because it's Nick Patrick, you're like, oh, you absolute rat. And like, what's old is
previous Patrick, what you doing?
It does and what's old is new again, and I am surprised that this finish hasn't been stolen time and time again. If Vince Russo made a career of remaking the Montreal Screwjob, why has nobody made a career of using this? They could call it the Pritchard finish or something, or the way, like, if Bruce wants to start doing it on SmackDown all the time. It was fantastic.
Number 11
is, for me, my highest tag team match, and therefore the match I consider the greatest tag team match in WWE history, from NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. Oh, sorry. NXT TakeOver Toronto, I apologise. The DIY versus The Revival.
I also have this as my number 11.
And hey, an old curmudgeon-y pants where he's having to go.
It's right, got so, a one in it, but it's on you go.
Yeah, right. So I'll keep it short. I'll keep it sweet. Rory talked to before about the rematch clause and how, you know, we tend to score rematches lower than the original match. In this case, the rematch is actually far superior to the original and builds on the original match, even to the point of using finishes from the original match, because it's a 2 out of 3 4 match. Just an amazing tag match. Everything about it, from using each other's finishing holds to the submissions at the end when Dawson and Wilder are just looking at each other, basically saying, "Don't you tap, motherfucker," and then they tap at exactly the same time. Love it, love it, love it.
It's what took over what we previously spoke about. Angle, Benoit, Edge, Mysterio is the greatest tag match in company history. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's, and I'll need to explain myself, it's not the highest tag match I've got on my list, but it is absolutely the best tag match in company history, if that makes sense at all. You'll find out very soon. So, Rory, that's your number 11 now, sir.
It is, and it's Warrior Savage career-ending match, WrestleMania 7.
Number 16.
So, I've got it somewhere.
68. Of course, it's in the 60s. We'll have your 60 list in a minute.
Do you know what? 60s.
I'm
going to put Austin Triple H as an honorary in the 60s.
You have to in that company.
So fire away, sir.
I suppose, in a way, I've got this match. This match has a lot to answer for, as it gave us the finisher kick out fest that I'm such a fan of these days. yes, you can actually explain it, and it isn't just to get This Is Awesome or Fight Forever chance. It's because the both of them are battling with their very last breath to save their careers, to the point where Warrior's asking the fucking gods if they can help him out and asking why they've forsaken him. Savage is crestfallen at the fact that he is not able to put Warrior away after five elbows. And I don't just mean he turned into the hard camera doing the shocked face, all right? One, it's not a quibble, it's a point about this match. I've gone back and forth about it in chats and stuff, that I used to not like the fact that Warrior pinned Savage in the end with just one foot on his chest. But my own personal headcanon has taken over, as it so often does. And I've alighted on the fact that if he wanted to, kayfabe of course, Savage could have kicked out, but he was so utterly demoralised, he wasn't able to. And he knew there was an even greater prize running down the aisle a couple of minutes later. Yeah. Pure wonderful story. We all know why Reinhardt cries at this one, that big lug. You know the guy. The guy who cries at WrestleMania 7, okay? Some places call him Reinhardt. You know who I mean. Warrior Savage.
Heart of stone if you don't cry at the end of that.
I wasn't even born when this match happened and I cry at it.
Nah, amazing match. Amazing match. Rory's articulated it beautifully.
Nope, yeah, can't see anymore.
Right then, so, Callum, you're going to quickly run through your 60s now.
Okay, yes. Right, let's do that before we get to the all-important top 10. So, all right, what I'll do is I'll do 70 to 60 because my 60s are doozy as well.
Go.
So, 70, Shawn Michaels versus Diesel, no holds barred, from good friends, better enemies. Mm-hmm. 69, Chris Jericho versus Shawn Michaels. It's unsanctioned match from Unforgiven 2008. 68 is the aforementioned Ultimate Warrior versus Randy Savage from WrestleMania 7. 67 is Cody Rhodes and Goldust versus The Shield from Battleground 2013. 66, Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 8. 65 is Kurt Angle versus Chris Benoit from the Royal Rumble 2003. 64 is the Armageddon Hell in a Cell match from Armageddon 2000. 63 is the Iron Man match from Judgment Day 2000 between The Rock and Triple H. 62 is another emotional encounter. It's Brock versus Eddie from No Way Out 2004. 61 is Shawn Michaels versus Chris Jericho from 2019, from WrestleMania 19. And number 60 is the Canadian Stampede 10-man tag team match.
As Tom York sang on the bends, I wish it was the 60s.
All killer, no filler.
That's a list and a half.
Which makes you wonder what the rest of my list's like. All filler, no killer.
Putting my foot down, okay? I have imposed strict rules on this one. We have 20 minutes, everybody, and I'm not going to edit this, to get through our entire top 10, and that is allowing for the fact that at some point these guys want to wax just a little bit. Maybe not wax, sort of... What's the opposite of wax? Wane.
Wax on,
wax off. They're going to wane just a little bit. They're going to wane lyrical over a couple of nights. But I'm going to hand over now my strict rules, because there'll be trouble.
Okay, kicking off my top 10 is my highest ranked NXT match, my highest ranked women's match, Bayley versus Sasha Banks from TakeOver Brooklyn.
It's on my list somewhere. Sorry, Rory, this is really mucking you up. No, I've spelt it wrong. Number 36 for me.
Okay, I'll try and be quick, Rory. Let me just take you back, boys, to 2015, if you can. We had week upon week upon week upon week of Bella versus AJ, or Nikki Bella versus Naomi. And good God, women's wrestling at that point, just absolutely awful. And then, you know, we all got the network in 2015. There was this thing called NXT, and these four women were tearing it up on that particular show. And this was them having the platform to do what they need to do. We talked earlier, we talked in the last bit about a match that made you cry at the end of the match. This was a match that made me cry at the beginning of the match when Bayley had a polka dot headband and wristband on. I was gone at that point. The match is beautiful.
Yes, I remember that.
That whole finishing sequence from the reverse Rana off the top through to the Bayley the belly. Absolutely amazing, you know, and the four horsewomen curtain call at the end, just absolute beautiful, and it's poetic, and I make no apologies for putting this high on my list. Absolutely amazing.
Ah, I can't add any more to that at all. The women's revolution was in full swing. Bayley was just as much a part of it on NXT as the other three that get credit for. So no, brilliant. Can't argue with it.
There was a reason she got left behind, and it wasn't because she wasn't any good.
No, she had to stabilise the division. They needed a workhorse on there. So my number 10 is a match that I'm going to need to do some explaining on. I imagine I'm going to be the high vote on this one as well. It's Mustache Mountain versus the Undisputed Era from NXT, July 11, 2018.
You are, sir.
So this match might not be as good as DIY versus Revival, but oh my God, is it a fantastic match. It is. I remember watching this from when we did the network adventure for the website. I watched it and I was taking notes intently and I put my pen down and I just watched it and they got me in. I was on the edge of my seat. I was shouting at the television. It's not a word of the lie. I was shouting at the television when O'Reilly had Trent in his knee bar and he was going, and the whole ending of it was excellent, with Tyler not wanting to throw in the towel, then fighting himself to throw in the towel and then eventually doing it because Trent's his best friend. He doesn't want to see him lose a limb or lose his career. Just fantastic. I would, Rory, if you've not seen it, I know you're not the biggest fan of NXT, go out your way and watch this main event, NXT, 11th of July 2018. It's one of the best matches you'll ever see. I'm not exaggerating.
Okay, I'll make it that. How do you spell NXT?
I think Vince has to ask that as well.
Impassioned stuff. My number 10 is... Well, no, maybe not, because I think this one could be quite divisive. But it's Undertaker, Mankind, Hell in a Cell, King of the Ring 98.
Number 20 for me.
I need a bit more prepared. I'm sorry, guys. It's on here. It is number 71 for me.
Had to be top 10 for me. The people who say that this match is just two spots, of course it fucking is.
But it's not actually, because it's a fucking brilliant match. And the thing is, how good a match could it have been had the obviously the first one was planned, the second one wasn't. How good a match could it have been if he didn't knock himself loopy on that, if the cell hadn't broken away? It's a great match regardless, but
if just flops onto the top of the cage, you know?
Probably not. Might have done.
This match will always be spoke about, no matter, you know, this one. 23 years time, this one's still going to be in anybody's worth their salt's top 10.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I can distill my thoughts on this match in one sentence. Oh my God, they killed him.
Uh-huh.
As God is my witness, he is broken in half. Best line of commentary ever.
Oh, absolutely. No qualms at all with it being top 10. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Well done, that man. Number 9.
Oh, single figures.
I know, how exciting. Number 9 is my highest ranked Royal Rumble match, the Royal Rumble of 1992.
Higher.
Number 50 for me.
Let's have your 9.
My 9 is Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker from WrestleMania 25.
Higher.
Okay. I had them back at 20. So, but let's talk about Michaels Undertaker now from Hell in a Cell. Another Hell in a Cell match, of course. This one's from Bad Blood 97.
Unfortunately not, because I have that higher.
Oh, lovely. Fantastic. Your number 8 then, Ben.
8. From SummerSlam 2013, Brock Lesnar, CM Punk.
Where was that?
That was, for me, number 25.
23 for me.
Okay, keep it short and sweet. Watched it again the other night just to make sure, because I was thinking, have I put this too high? No, I hadn't put this too high. To quote, and I hate to quote JBL and Cole at this point, but this match really did have that big fight feel. Just again, before Brock went off the rails and turned into, you know, this weird red-faced guy about to have a heart attack at any minute. Absolutely amazing. Two Heyman guys. You could just tell the three of them had put this match together. And the only reason Brock won it is because Punk let his emotions get the better of him and he went for Heyman instead of going for Brock. It wasn't a case of the better man won on the match. The cleverer man won on the night. But yeah, absolutely fantastic. Well worth in my top 10.
I can say very little to add to that.
No.
When a match as good as that is only the second best match on a pay-per-view, and I think the 23rd best match of all time is only the second best match of a pay-per-view, you know you've got quite a pay-per-view on your hands.
You've done all right, haven't you, as a show?
I would say so. I would say so.
Great match.
My number 8 is my highest ranked NXT match. It's Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano, the last man standing from TakeOver Brooklyn 4.
I haven't got that one. I don't think so. The New Orleans match is 14, and I've got another one of theirs. You talk, Caleb, and I'll try and find it.
I think it's for me, obviously, it's the best NXT match. These two guys are, given that they're best friends, will always make sure that they have a good match with each other, because they're one, capable of doing it, and two, they're not exactly going to be selfish. Much like the Triple H Steve Austin one from before, there was no winner, there was just a survivor. And it's the perfect, given that they never went any further, they never did anything more, it was the perfect way to finish until maybe coming up. But no, it was a fantastic match between guys who have fantastic matches.
Yeah.
With their eyes closed.
The other one I've got is the Chicago one, so I haven't got this at all. And I think this might be an example of the problem people have got with NXT. And I do get that problem where sort of the matches all do mix into one after a while. So there's a match. I get the criticism. I don't fully agree with it. But here you've got a match that makes somebody's top 10, and me, who is quite an NXT Uber fan, it doesn't even meet my 100.
There you go.
It's not a case of me forgetting the match. It's a case of I just prefer the other two.
You'd never forget anything NXT related, would you? Let's be honest about this. It's there for keeps in that great matter of yours.
Oh, what are you trying to say?
I'm actually damning you with faint praise here. I'm probably giving you a bit of credit, man.
I know. Just a bit of bants, Rob. Just a bit of bants.
Bants for the Zed.
It's extreme.
Okay. Number 8 for me. Great. Sean, WrestleMania 10, ladder match.
Higher for me.
Whoa, good lad.
Ooh, good lad.
Number 7.
Number 7, Brett versus Owen, WrestleMania 10.
Hi.
That's also my number 7.
So my number 7 is Michaels Mankind from Mind Games 96.
My 22.
Yeah, it was my 20.
Oh, lovely. We've all got this one really high as well. Remember what I said about the Diesel match? Saying that Michaels really needed that one. He did, and he was able to build on it here. Michaels works like... knowing he has to get a little bit wacky, to say the very least, to work with Mankind. And Mankind knows he's going to have to try to wrestle to deal with Shawn Michaels. What they'd have to do in the talking about our match backstage sense is exactly what their characters needed to do out there as well. And on a dog of a show, they gave us one for the ages. So many spots, I don't need to talk about them. I just wish they'd had a bit more of a feud out of it, but maybe the fact it was a real one-off, unless you count that match on Raw in August 97, just makes it seem all that extra special. One I just throw on any time and just love a little bit more. I can look past the DQ finish because I'm hypocritical, because I love this one so fucking much.
You took the words out of my mouth. You can. This match is so good, you can look past the damp squib that was the ending of it.
I like the fact that, you know, one guy's known for wrestling, one guy's known for hardcore, and they both try to mimic the other guy's style.
Exactly.
And it just blends beautifully.
Can we also just point out that one of the guys in this match wasn't good enough for WCW in 1995, and post Hogan, and now he's main event in a WWF pay per view after 6 months, less than 6 months in the company. Done all right for yourself there, Mr. Foley.
Okay, so my number six, and I don't think we have too big an argument because, like we say, we are going to be time constrained. Is from WrestleMania 17 for the WWF title, Steve Austin and The Rock.
I had that one way, way fucking back somewhere.
It's a good thing we can't argue about that. I had it in number 49. Sorry, I had it at.
You know how certain people, and you know, I know he gets piss taken out of him quite often for his age, but like Scott Criscolo considers Andre Hulk his main event. Austin Rock's my main event. Okay. And I might skewed it up a bit higher for that. And I love the match, and I know why people don't like it. I know why Rory doesn't like it. I get all that. I have no problem with people watching it. I probably have favoured it a bit too high. Maybe not.
The heel turn is poorly realised. There you go. I'll expand on that another day. Austin turning heel doesn't bother me. I just don't like how they do it.
Yeah, and I agree with that, because they could have done that the night after. I totally get that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, my number six is, again, Steve Austin, this time against Bret Hart from Survivor Series 1996.
Okay, I can't apologise yet then.
My number six, lots of people in this one, is the main event from Canadian Stampede.
That was one of Rory's Callum's Roaring 60s.
It was my Roaring 60s.
Roaring 60s.
That for me was 25.
Yeah, we did this one. If you remember, Ben, we watched this one in one of our live chats a few months ago. It was bubbling around. It was always going to be very high on my list. It was knocking around the low 20s. It shot up as soon as we rewatched it. The raw emotion. It's completely and utterly and totally unfakeable. And that's just the crowd. You can watch as much with your eyes closed for 25 minutes and you can still have it pretty much this high. But everybody brings it. I mean, I've got a match with people like Pork. Fucking Jim Neidhart, the sixth greatest WWF match of all time, came together like a treat. And it was the final closing full stop or period, if you're listening to this across the water, of the World Wrestling Federation Mark One. Because me, the very day after this, things started to change inextricably from where they were before. This was 1984 to 1997's final month. What a way to go out. That final shot of the Hart family, gets you right there.
You know how I have a column that maybe isn't flies in the opinion or flies in the opposite opinion as to what others think?
Yes.
This match was sort of the off. So you know how in the last one I might have said a match isn't that great that a lot of people do think is great.
May have brought the internet,
So this is like the opposite of that, because when we were on that chat, Rory, do you remember there was people going, this is about, you know, this would be about 60, 70 on my list. I think me and you were like, are you fucking mad?
Yeah. More people should listen to us, Ben.
They really should. They really should. We do.
One day they will.
Just three words about this match that I can... just want to add. Can you guess what the three words are?
As long as two of them aren't Bruce Hart, then you're
no,
fine.
No. Best crowd ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of that.
They will never beat that. They'll try, but they will never beat that.
I will have some of that.
I've got a match coming up where the crowd come bloody close, but yeah, I can go with that.
Top five, and we have that many minutes to complete it, gentlemen. Go.
Let's do it.
Okay, number five, from the Royal Rumble 2000, Cactus Jack versus Triple H.
I had that back in the 20s.
34.
Fantastic. Triple H's best match. Everything about it. Foley makes him the man in one night. And again, you know, so opposite from the match, go back, watch that SmackDown with that Foley promo. It'll set you up perfectly.
But feels like brilliant. A war. And as much as pro wrestling can, it feels like a war, that match.
Yeah. Absolutely.
My number five, AJ Styles versus John Cena from SummerSlam 2016.
Oh, I had that way, way back.
That was way back in the 30s. Yeah, 32.
I've said everything I wanted to say the first time, put number 12 with the Royal Rumble match. This is everything that that match had, less the title, less the big arena, but it was the better match in my eyes.
Rumble match has a fraction more, but this one was still pretty safely inside my top 100, so I'm not going to quibble. Cena Styles, innit?
What more can you say?
On my number 5, even now when we're under a very, very, very tight time regime imposed by me, I'm still going to do this. It's Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from Survivor Series 96.
I had that at number 6.
I have let the side down badly on that one.
Number 52, and I will shout it out. Number 52. At least 30 places too low. I will have
at least acceptance is the first stage and all that.
You know? Thank you.
Yeah. What a comeback for Brett. What a way for Austin to put his foot, ram his fucking head through the door, wrestling Bret Hart for 25 minutes. Perfect psychology. I just love that spot where he goes for the stunner, but Austin thinks just a little bit too much about it. Waste time by pulling Brett to the center of the ring, giving him chance to recover, kick out. Brett dipping back into his old boxing tricks to win it. The crowd slowly coming round towards... Oh, it's just a peach. Number 5. It's an absolute fucking peach.
This isn't church, but it sure feels like holy ground.
Oh, yes. What a line.
Number 4, Ben.
Number 4, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker from WrestleMania 25.
20 for me.
Number 8 for me.
So I'll be quick as I can. I think I mentioned that our very first show, 2005 to 2010, is a very foggy area for me. That will tell you how good this match is, because it's from 2009 and it got as high as number 4.
Undertaker legit brains himself in this one, and yet Michaels gives him time by coming up with one of my favourite in-match spots, character-based spots you will ever see anywhere. He is begging the referee to count Undertaker out. He just wants to beat the guy, and if it means a count-out win, then so fucking be it.
He just wants to end the streak. He doesn't give a shit how.
Yep.
Excellent.
Number 4, Callum.
Number 4, Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels, the ladder match from WrestleMania 10.
Number 8.
27.
Without this match, do you have the ladder matches that come after it? Probably not. Shawn Michaels, it's easy to say that Shawn Michaels wrestles a ladder for 20 minutes. It could also be couldn't be further from the truth. Razor more than contributes to this match. It's a match that I can watch over and over again. Again, one of the ones that was on the From the Vault DVD. The legendary From the Vault DVD. it's superb. It's also a match that I showed the good lady the other week because she wanted to see a match with a bit of bum in it. And obviously, Shawn Michaels' favourite.
Shawn Michaels' is the favourite trope. Provider of bum.
Yes.
Okay.
So there you go. You know, baby steps. After bum, maybe we'll go on to King of the Ring 1998. I don't know. Baby steps. So, Rory. Yeah, moving swiftly on, Rory.
Very, very quickly. There's somebody else who likes to... Yeah, anyway. Royal Rumble 92. There you go.
That was back my 50s somewhere.
Just the best. Just the best.
Exactly 50.
It's the best match of its type. And I say it's very nearly the best match of any type. It's 62 minutes long and it's in 1992. And I think it's the fourth greatest match of all time. You all know all about this one. There might not be a tear in my eye at the moment, but there probably should be. And let's face it, at the end of those 62 minutes, somebody did. And he's the most important person. So you just need to go back and watch it if you haven't for a while. Or even if you watch it this morning, just fucking watch it again.
But all you need to remember is Barbarian doesn't like flair.
He's not a hairdresser on his dial-up, you know.
Mine was marked down because of blatant racism. It's not a fucking skirt. It's a kilt.
Let it go, McDougal, let it go.
And it is.
You skirt wearing freak!
It ben, is cozy. It is comfortable. It's a fucking kilt.
And we're back on bum again, aren't we?
Right. Yes.
Your number 3, Ben, just come.
Is that the episode title, Back on Bum?
No, it never was. Not as far
it's
as I
remember.
Okay. It is a family show. Yeah, that's correct. Okay, so number three. From WrestleMania 3, Savage Steamboat.
Number 21.
Oh, God. 33 for me.
Okay, for me, I'll just keep it very short. Best pure wrestling match that the company have ever done. That'll do.
Fair enough.
That's part of the problem, inverted commas. It's just not enough of another kind of match. But pure wrestling for 1987, oh, yes. I'm more JT than Scott this one.
No, can't argue with that.
Yeah, but it's fucking wonderful. Number three, Callum.
Number three, I'm making a liar out of myself. This is actually my highest NXT match. It's Tommaso Ciampa versus Johnny Gargano from TakeOver New Orleans.
And that's the one I have got at 14.
I've said all I can say about Ciampa against Gargano. I can't, like, there's nothing else I can add. I might have this one slightly too high, it's the only thing. But at number, being in a top 10 match of all time, I don't think it's preposterous that it should be there. I think
give it time, that will go higher. That will get higher for me.
One of these matches that, this is how I argued, again, sorry Scott, this is how I argued Triple H and the GWWE wrestler of all time. You won't argue if he's top 10. You wouldn't argue if he was bottom 10.
Hmm.
Deserves to be there. Where do you put him? You can't really argue. So that's my 2 cents on that one. My 2p on that one. Rory, you're number three.
Austin, dude, over the edge, 98.
Number, where have I got that? 33.
45 for me.
Oh, you heathens. When I talk about the anchors, if you will, go back and listen to our first episode of these. If Rock Triple H at Backlash 2000 was the second best example of a WWF style main event in this era, then this is and always will be for any era the first. Everybody from Austin all the way down to Gerald Briscoe, they could not play their role any better.
No.
I'm not going to introduce a bum like him.
Bum again.
Ben, you're number two.
Okay, so my number two. In the first part of this episode, I talked about what my favourite match of all time. This is it. From Money in the Bank 2011, John Cena versus CM Punk.
I repeat, that was my 14.
Yeah, that was. I think that was quite low for me. It wasn't. 17, probably.
This again, I think, is a sort of a heart ruled my head sort of match. It's the match that brought me back into watching wrestling full time. I was a huge Punk mark, still am a huge Punk mark. It's the match that made me realise that this Cena guy is pretty good at wrestling. That crowd, and we talked about Canadian Stampede crowd earlier on, I would say this is second place in that best crowd ever conversation. But yeah, fantastic. Even the bit at the end, because again, it didn't rely on the old trope of, oh, Alberto's going to cash in the Money in the Bank. No, he's not, because Punk's going to run through the crowd and leave. But yeah, love it. Fantastic.
My number two, Bret Hart versus Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Well, that's a bit of a giveaway.
Suspense, everybody. Suspense.
So shall I do my number one first?
I think you should. I think you should.
Yes.
Yeah. So before that, what's your number two, Ron?
My number two is Bret Hart versus Owen Hart from WrestleMania 10.
My number seven.
Hello. Is everyone there?
Hello.
Is everyone there?
Can hear you.
Here. We can hear you.
Are we still here?
Yes.
Oh, no.
You are joking.
Are we still here? Can everyone hear?
Yes, I can hear you. Hang on.
Oh,
Ben,
good.
Ben, hello. Ben, are you there?
Hello. I am here.
I can hear you. Can you hear Callum too?
I can hear Callum, yes.
Good. Oh, that, I thought that was stingy.
Oh,
I thought that was going to be a nightmare.
You just wanted to stay on the line just a little bit longer.
You did that on purpose, didn't you?
Can we keep that in, please?
Gotta keep that in.
Yeah. But yeah.
We almost got, after 9 hours, we almost got to the end and it cut.
All over again. I wouldn't, because if we had to start again, that would mean you mentioning Moolah versus Wendy Richter again. Drop in there today.
So, because I'll change it to Steve Austin Triple H on the way out beforehand. So, Rory, you're number two.
My number two is Brett versus Owen from WrestleMania 10.
Number seven for me.
It was there or thereabouts for me.
Just don't pretend you haven't been there on either side. Don't pretend you haven't been there.
Come on. No, it's excellent.
It is.
Excellent story, excellent match.
Even that bit right at the beginning when the ring announcer does the from Calgary, Alberta, and then Owen's music kicks in.
Oh,
the crowd go from like cheering madly to just booing. Oh, it's so good. So good.
Again,
Callum, bring it home before who knows what Ben and I are going to have in store. So.
So,
my number one match on my GWWE list after 9 hours is Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker, Hell in a Cell from Bad Blood 1997.
Oh, wow. So, for the sake of argument, just for the record, really, number nine for me.
That was top. It was in the top 20. It was 17.
If one thing you may have picked up from my list is if it's got plunder, shenanigans, blood, if it's brutal, I absolutely love it. It's not taken away anything from Brett against Austin, because we all know that descended in like that as well. But this one, to be the first match of its, the first Hell in a Cell match, they made it very, very difficult for any of them to follow up. It was excellent. Them getting out the cell wasn't contrived either. There was a reason why the door opened after them making the big hoo-ha about no one gets in, no one gets out. They gave it a reason other than somebody breaking in. Like, sorry, I'll take that back. Before somebody broke in, they made a reason for people for them not to break in. And then you've obviously got the finish. It's just well deserving of the 5-star it gets, as we've talked about, the clinical 5-star system. But for me, it's best ever.
Worthy number one, my friend.
Best blade job ever.
It certainly was disgusting enough, and the camera angle for it as well.
That just the speed you did it. That was the thing.
Mid air.
Yeah. So yeah.
Remember, after he's bleeding, Undertaker rams him into the cell, and you see it's like he's coming right into the camera.
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Again, another match with some more great commentary. Obviously, you've got That's Gotta Be Kane. And Lawler's incoming. It's just, so good. So good.
Pure catharsis, this match. I love it.
And guess where I first watched this? On the legendary From the Vault DVD.
Has that DVD got like pride of place or framed somewhere?
It should have. I'd be fine with that.
Fucking excellent.
So our number one, Benjamin.
Yes.
Spoilers.
For many reasons, it's not just obvious not to be found on that DVD, I'm sure.
I didn't find it in the hidden DVD extras. You press right 14 times and that match comes on.
Well, on the first Triple H DVD, he had Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat wrestling bonus match on there, but Sean did not have this as a bonus match on there.
Although one of the bonuses was an advert for the Buddy Rose blowaway diet for some reason. Anyway,
but yeah, number one for both of us.
Does deserve number one epithet. It's of course Bret Austin from WrestleMania 13. It needs no introduction or description. But Ben, have a little one for us. Go on.
It's the whole double turn. They do it to such perfection. The fact that it blurs that line, you know, between wild arena spanning brawl, and then it gets quite technical for a few minutes, and then Brett turns into a vicious heel. You know,
the blood out of a stone image is sort of ingrained, isn't it? Quite rightly. Even Shamrock doesn't ruin the match. Absolute beautiful storytelling all the way through.
John Peel's favourite song of all time was Teenage Kicks by The Undertones. And the reason he said it was his favourite song of all time, there's not a single second of it that you could subtract from it. Nothing else you could add to it that could make it any better. The greatest Nothing match wasted. Of all time, Bret Hart versus Steve Austin, WrestleMania 13. So hard to beat.
We've done it, boys. We have done it.
We have.
Yeah, we've done it all right, yeah.
So after 9 hours, then we've actually made it longer than WrestleMania 32.
just.
Yeah, I was going to say, just.
Shockingly.
I should say. You're gone.
Shockingly, a show where no matches appeared on any of our lists. I wonder why.
What is wrong with us? We did aim to do all of this in one show, by the way, everybody. I must say that was our original aim. Seems rather stupid now, but it really was.
Yeah, so next year, top 20.
Top one?
This year's stretch project will not be as bad. A, because of, well, I say A, mostly because of the time frame. You know, we've only got sort of 10, 15 years to pick from, really. Whereas this has been, you know, 30 years of matches.
And matches that are getting added on every single week.
Yeah.
At least there's a finite amount
to choose from. There's a cut-off point.
How about we just do a composite list next year?
Yes.
So, before we go...
Work, actually.
Before we go, shall we decide, shall we announce what the UK's favourite match is? The UK's top 10.
Let's do it.
So, as we speak for the whole of the UK, because we've got, you know, someone from the Tit North, someone from Scotland, someone from Tit South, almost Midlands, you know, close enough.
We're both from the Midlands.
Is Stoke in the Midlands?
Yeah.
Oh, so I thought Stoke was in Tit North. My geography's rubbish, by the way. It's okay. We've got two guys from the Midlands and somebody from the North, very North. So we cover all the UK, basically, because that's what we do. As we speak for the United Kingdom. So the UK's top 10. Here we go. Number 10, Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage from WrestleMania 3. Number 9 is Brock Lesnar versus CM Punk from SummerSlam 2013. Number 8 is Shawn Michaels versus Mankind from In Your House Mind Games 1996. Well, I feel like I'm on Top of Pops. And new in at number 7 is AJ Styles versus John Cena from the Royal Rumble 2017. Number 6 is Razor Ramon versus Shawn Michaels, the ladder match from WrestleMania 10. Number 5, Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker from WrestleMania 25. Number 4 is John Cena versus CM Punk for the WWE title, Money in the Bank 2011. Number 3 is Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker from In Your House Bad Blood. Number 2 is Bret Hart versus Owen Hart from WrestleMania 10, and deservedly is Bret Hart versus Steve Austin, the submission match from WrestleMania 13. So Bret versus Austin is the UK's favourite ever WWE match as of
2019.
A worthy pick.
Absolutely.
Only the best. Okay, let's
Absolutely.
Go.
That's it.
We've entertained you, fair enough.
I've entertained, might be a bit of a stretch. So we will have some proper programming for you next time.
Our first proper show.
Exactly.
Yes.
After 5 months. Sixth recording.
Yes.
After 5 months. So, and then after that, obviously, the April show, we will be celebrating, you know, the Masters is starting, so it's going to be in Augusta, so I think that's the reason why we should watch December to Dismember again. sorry, tangents. We've gone over our curfew here, guys, so that's my fault for all these shitey chan tangents. Anyway, so, yes, next time we will have some properly scheduled programming for you. But until then, Ben, are you planning on breaking the internet again?
Not again. Just to quickly say, so you can reach me individually on Twitter at BenL981. You can even contact this show. We've got our own show Twitter.
We do. So
that is at PTBN Special Rel 1. So Special Rel 1. And one final thing, in a world where we could be anything that we want to be, just remember, guys, be kind. Thank you. Thank you very much for listening. Sorry, I had to go all sloppy there, guys. I do apologise.
Oh, no. Absolutely no. It needs to be said. Yeah, PTBN Special Rel 1, if you want to comment on the show, or you just generally want to chat about nothing.
We're not that good at updating it at the minute. We will get better.
We will get better. If you do send us a message, we will reply. If you want to talk about wrestling or, you know, football or anything at all.
And as Rory said, we are going to be doing a proper show next episode. Yes, so you will actually have
something to contact us about.
Yes, we will put show topics up so you can make comments before we come on air.
Any ideas for show topics? Not top 100 lists?
That's how organised we are going to be, kids. That's how organised we're going to be.
Because it's not our show, the three of us. It's our show, everybody.
Oh. I feel like we should be playing like Mike and the Mechanics of the Living Years behind this.
No.
So, Rory, do you have anything to plug?
Maybe. Just the old Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. You can find us there, here, there, everywhere. I don't know anymore. 10 hours. No, just
10 hours. Rory needs to get some sleep.
10 hours.
So what? What the topics this month? Is it Super Brawl?
Super Brawl 2000 and No Way Out 2000.
Oh,
one of these things is not like the other. all right, so yeah, as I said, you can contact the show. It's PTBN at PTBN Special Rail 1. One of us will pick it up. You can contact me directly at Callum7McDougall. If you want to follow me, all you'll get is rants about football and Scottish sport in general, because we're absolutely rubbish at everything. Occasionally there is positive stuff on it, very occasionally. Nothing else to say, but thank you for bearing with us. Thank you for listening. We will hopefully bring more entertainment coming forward. We will see you soon.
So good. I wanna hold her, wanna hold her tight. That teenage kicks right through the night. I'm gonna call her on the telephone. Have her over, cause I'm all alone. I need excitement, oh, I need it bad. And it's the best I've ever had. I wanna hold her, wanna hold her tight. That teenage kicks right through.
track through.